We get into a fight, I accidentally kill you, I go to jail.
Anybody accidentally kills anybody in a fight, they go to jail. It's called manslaughter.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 126 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we are 2 days removed from the first ever Skip to the End live show, Skipfest.
Woo! Woo!
Yeah!
And I think it's fair to say we're all a little bit worse for wear.
Knackered.
Absolutely. Still hungover.
So shattered.
And I know it's not great form to do this, to pat yourself on the back, but it was a roaring success, wasn't it?
Yeah. You kind of build it up and plan it for weeks and weeks and weeks, hoping it will just be pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
And I do actually believe it's one of the best nights of my life. Mm-hmm. I absolutely loved it from start to finish.
Yeah, the payoff was completely worth it. And how cool was it to actually visualize people that listen to us in the flesh?
Yes, they're real.
Amazing. Yeah. Not bots.
No.
Finally putting real life faces to these names that we've heard, and voices to these names that we've heard as well. It was fantastic. And all the people who turn up, all the Skip fam who traveled to see us, were fantastic. They're in great spirits.
Wonderful people too.
Absolutely awesome. The moment you came on stage, it was like, Jesus, they were like so rowdy and loud.
Yeah.
And they weren't that drunk.
No.
I think we actually did all right, guys. Yeah. We actually did well.
Well done, us.
And we have to say thank you as well to many of the members of the Skip fam who clubbed together to buy us some gifts, which we were not expecting at all. So what did we all get? What did you get, Mark?
Well, for a while, people have known that I like the film Mac and Me.
Yes.
And I can't believe they got this, but Bottleneck Gallery did this like exclusive sort of 10-inch plush doll of it, and I think they made 50 and it sold out straight away. And I couldn't believe it. At the end of the show, they gave me a McDonald's bag, and I thought, well, that's all right, but if you brought me a Big Mac, it's okay, but surely I've earned more than that. I took the wrapper off, and I think there's video footage and pictures online, but that was a genuine reaction. I couldn't believe they actually got me one of these, and he's here today with us now.
Hey, Mac!
It's like a mascot.
I can't stop looking at his mouth.
I know.
It's like the asshole of his face.
Yeah, it's a bum old mouth.
Ben, get off him.
Sorry, am I not allowed to touch him?
It's like a rare Funko. You can't touch it or take it out. It's amazing.
Don't even look at it. In fact,
and what did you get, Gemma? Because this is incredible.
Yeah. So I got a massive long tube, and in that massive long tube was a real life poster prop from the film 28 Days Later, telling the public exactly what they needed to do during the event of a zombie outbreak. Also got a really lovely little certificate to say that it was all authentic. Mm-hmm. I was bowled over. Again, you don't expect gifts at events like this. You don't even expect a gift. You know, I'm lucky that even if I get birthday presents, but at the same time, it's such a good thought, and it's going to be up in my studio, proud as punch.
And it was great that the presents they gave us proved how well they knew us. Obviously, they got Mark his Mac and Me doll. They got you that poster from 28 Days Later. And for me, I got a magnificent book. It's The Art and Soul of Blade Runner 2049. And it's this huge, heavy, hardback book all about the art and the creation of the film. And it's a magnificent book that I would have loved anyway, but even more so because the front of the book is signed not only by the author, Tanya LaPointe, but also by the director of the film, Denis Villeneuve.
Incredible.
Unreal.
That's amazing,
it's
man.
It's absolutely spectacular.
Also noted, when we were asked a question in the night about which director do we dig, and you straight away said Denis Villeneuve.
I did.
Can you imagine everybody's faces as soon as they realised that, you know, we got it, we got him!
Yes, nailed it.
And they asked as well about a guilty pleasure film, and mine was Mac and Me. It all came together.
And I am guilty about it.
Yeah, amazing.
And that wasn't the only gift we got as well. A good friend of the podcast, Damien, he brought us all t-shirts. We weren't expecting that as well.
That's incredible.
They were lovely.
There's so much stuff being given away, man.
Yeah. And love.
Yes.
Lots and lots of love. You can't buy that.
You can't buy love. I mean,
you probably can.
Well,
you can buy a close approximation to it.
So like love. No, yes. 80% love.
But a lot of people that I want to give some love to, a lot of people involved in the event besides us three. Of course, our good friend Benny was there.
Yep.
You all know Benny if you listen to the show. He performed a 10-minute stand-up set at the start of the show as a warm-up for the evening. And how great was he?
He was wonderful. Hilarious. Everybody was on his side. And the amount of people that came up to me and said, he needs to do that as a full-time job. Mm-hmm.
I don't think he will because he's a teacher. So I think he's got to be careful what he says. But I thought he was going to attack us. I thought he's got 10 minutes and we're just going to get absolutely destroyed. Yeah. But I'm kind of glad he didn't, because he just did random jokes. And I was just in the palm of his hand for the moment he came on. And I was like, how are we going to top this?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
He's actually funny.
Yeah.
He was brilliant.
He was brilliant. And the thing is as well, I'm sure he won't mind me saying, but he was the most nervous one out of all of us.
No.
Because at least the three of us, we had one another to rely on stage. It was just him in the spotlight on his own, and he killed it.
Yeah, I mean, when you're going to walk up to Coldplay's Fix You, you know, we really didn't help matters, but Benny, you popped it out of the park.
He popped it out of the park, if that's a phrase. It is now. And as well as Benny, I also want to give a great shout out to Graham, aka Jaws19. He was the MC of the event. He was a true pro and just a thoroughly bloody nice chap as well.
Yeah, and again, how do you open up a show? You know what I mean? He's there, he's got to kind of warm up the crowd. He did it like more than, maybe it was the drink as well, but he did it more than anything. From the moment he came on, I was like, I just want to sit and watch this guy.
Yes, me too. I was like
do we have to actually go on in a bit? Fucking hell.
But sterling job, and he supported us and vice versa. Really, we couldn't have asked for anybody better.
And he's also, he was also filming some footage throughout the day, so before the show and after the show, a little behind the scenes type stuff. And he's edited it all together as a video, which you can watch now on the Jaws 19 show Twitter feed. So go and have a look for that. That's a great bit of fun. In there, you'll see what was happening as we were setting up. There are brief interviews with each of the three of us as well.
Mm-hmm.
I won't lie, Ben, I can't believe you agreed to go on camera. And it wasn't just a photo, you did a proper interview.
Yeah. I know.
How drunk were you at that stage?
I was about four Guinnesses deep, but you got to give the people what they want, though, ain't you?
Exactly.
And speaking of filming as well, we also had our friend Rich there filming the show with a proper professional rig. He had four cameras set up all over. He's going to edit all that footage together. We're eventually going to put out online somewhere the whole show. So those of you who didn't make it, thanks to Rich, you will be able to enjoy it with us.
Amazing. That was the thing that did scare me, because I was thinking, well, if anything goes that wrong, only the people that are here tonight, you'll get so drunk by the end of the night. It went on until 4 a.m. So I thought, well, everyone won't remember. But then I kept seeing that little red light and I was thinking, oh, fuck, it's being filmed.
Yeah, I'm tremendously nervous now. I made a right tit of myself.
But Ben actually said to me at the end of the night, well done, you actually didn't say anything too offensive.
That's true, actually.
So maybe we should film us every week. That's the way to do it.
Couple of other people I want to shout a thank out to. We did this on the day, but I think it's worth doing it on the show as well. I want to say thank you to our former co-host, Adam. Adam turned up as a bit of a surprise guest, came on stage and did a feature with us, didn't he? And that was a bit of fun, a bit of a blast from the past.
It was. Retro.
It was good to see the response he got as well. And just having him back on stage, having his arms around him and just like celebrating, because he was there from the start and did a good couple of about two and a half years.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the reasons why we did this show now is to coincide with our five-year anniversary. Today is our five-year anniversary episode. So it was important for me and all of us to have Adam there with us, because he was a part of the beginning of this show.
Yeah.
That 5 years belongs to him as much as it does to us, so I was really happy to have him there. And our good friend Scott was there as well. He was working the door for us, wasn't he?
All night, man.
Plus one!
I love the fact that he was doing such a good job and he didn't ask for anything for it. He just stood there, gave all the wristbands out, gave all the prizes out, was helping with the chairs and everything. And then Gemma called him a skip bitch. That's the respect you want for doing a hard day's graft.
Ben ratted me out!
I did. I ratted Gemma out live on stage that she called Scott and them skip bitches.
But yeah, an absolute awesome job he did. And just like, we had to pay him with a lot of iron brew. But he was very, very grateful.
Viewings of Train Spotting.
Shortbread with sugar on is a good treat. I like that. People don't have it a lot. It's at Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah.
For some reason, you get Twiglets in tubs, cheddars and shortbread. You never had that in March, do you?
No, well, we should. Shortbread every day of the year.
Next episode, shortbread.
Skip to the shortbread.
Fuck it. That's shortbread. M&S, they do good shortbread. It comes in a nice tin.
This shortbread section has gone on far too long.
Hasn't it just?
I want to thank shortbread.
But just to round up the thanks, we also want to say thank you to all the staff and the crew at Firebug in Leicester.
Yes,
while we put on the show, they were fantastic, really helpful. They got us through the night. And a shout out to our sponsorship partners as well, Funko Brothers, Last Exit to Nowhere. Have I missed anyone out of the sponsors?
No, that was it, I think. Everyone gave some amazing prizes and helped us then give goodie bags out.
Yes, that's booty bags, Mark.
That was awesome. Booty bags!
That was it. Everyone got to take something amazingly away with them. And I was loving the fact that now we've seen so many photos online.
Yeah.
Keyrings, badges, sunglasses, Funko Pop. There's shitloads, man.
Shitloads of stuff. And if you out there want to see what everyone received, just go onto Twitter and search for the hashtag SkipFam, and you'll see hundreds upon hundreds of photos of all this crazy, crazy goodness. And then the final shout-out, I suppose, is to the SkipFam themselves.
Yeah.
We mentioned this at the start of the show, but thank you so much for coming. It means the world to us.
Yeah, you're a really great bunch of people, and we cannot wait to see you in the future.
Shall we tell them what's coming up on today's show?
I literally thought we'd done that already.
So I can't
Shit. Oh my god. Our review is a big one. Perhaps we should have saved it until we were more awake and not so hungover, but it's the ninth film from Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
No, right?
I don't know if I'm ready to talk about this.
I've got one or two things to say.
Good.
A fair few notes.
Maybe even three. Well, to counterbalance the bigness. Who says that? Not me. To counteract that, we're going to have a lovely little rewatch called Lars and the Real Girl. It's not exactly, you know, an Avengers-type film. Hell, there's not even a flying saucer in it.
Sure.
It's just a sweet, lovely film, and we'll be talking about that a little bit later on.
And our topic of conversation this time round, top three heist movies. Again, another one that I'm amazed we've got this far into the show and never covered.
I think, and I know we say it, but I think it was easily our most popular. Yeah, it was on social media. Mm-hmm. I've never seen so many responses, and I was kind of looking for them today going, oh man, like I forgot that's a heist film, that one. So I can't wait to see what you guys have got. Wow, this is a big one. We're going to be masturbating over Richard Linklater.
Yeah.
And again, I've been practicing it. It's nice. I can say it well done. So yeah, I can't wait for that one. He's not got a lot out, but what he has got, there's a nice selection. So bring that on.
And it's only round three, the final round of our quiz show, Lost the Plot, again. See how I really big that up? But we got some two behemoths playing. We got Mark, we got Ben, they're going to go head to head. And it's going to be the decider as to who wins the belt.
My money's on Mark because my brain is fucked at the minute. Now, I'm in no fit state to play a game.
Now that's interesting you say that, because if Mark wins, we all win.
Oh my
That's
god!
True, yeah.
That me and Ben,
maybe rock paper scissors.
Ooh, maybe.
I don't know. You know how tense that was at Skipfest.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Oh, I've said too much.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that, and I'll be honest. I don't think either of us are going to get any points today.
It's going to be a shit show. And of course, we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We're going to give away a hell of a lot of prizes, and we'll also be giving you our pop culture recommendations of the week. But it's going to be slightly different to the way we normally do it.
Ooh.
As you will hear when you get there, we have got the live audio from Skipfest when we did a live Skip to the Recommend. So you'll be able to get just a little taste of what it was like to be in the room that night.
Nice.
Wow.
Let's get started. Our topic of conversation then, top three heist movies. I think, not only from the three of us, but from the listeners as well, we're going to get quite a few movies we've not covered in the past, which is what I'm looking forward to the most.
Oh yeah.
So let's see if I'm right or if I'm just talking absolute shit. Mark, what is your first heist movie?
It is Guy Ritchie's last ever good film, Snatch.
Nice.
Great pick.
Let's be honest, he hasn't done anything decent since. But
not
this,
at all.
For me, is one of the best British films ever made. Not only is it a good heist film, it's a good film in general.
Very funny film.
Oh, man. For me, Brad Pitt in this film is completely different to anything we've ever seen before as this pikey, which isn't offensive because that's what he is in the film.
Okay. I mean, it is offensive.
I don't mean that word, but he's a gypsy. He's a gypsy.
Yes.
The film says, I fucking hate pikeys, so we're allowed. Jason Statham, before he actually got absolutely massive blockbuster kind of headline material, who I think's great. And we've got Del Toro.
Yeah.
People forget he's in this film, and he's absolutely brilliant. For me, it tops Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels by a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really do think it's his best ever work. The story's quite simple, really. They're trying to track down a diamond that's been stolen. And in that, you've got a boxing promoter, you've got some bookmakers, you've got a gangster, you've got some amateur robbers, and some Jewish jewelers. So between all that, throw that into a mix, and for some reason, it just works.
Yeah.
There's so many little twists in it. But for me, like I said just a moment ago, Brad Pitt steals the show for me. He's got this, do you like dags?
Dags!
It's for his ma. And he's so different to any of these Hollywood characters you've seen him play before, these massive iconic characters.
Always iconic.
But it's so, so good. Some of the scenes that you see where he's got these boxing matches, I remember Oasis, Fucking in the Bushes is playing. And it's so well shot, and some of the like directing and the cinematography where he's punching him, you see him fall into the water of the ring and everything. I've just never seen him top it. He's just doing shite now, like fucking Aladdin and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel he's wasted because Lock, Stock and That are some of the best. Rock and Roll is a great film as well.
No, it isn't. You're just wrong.
Perhaps I got it mixed up with something else.
Rock and Wronger.
Has that got Daniel Craig in it?
No. You're thinking of Layer Cake.
Oh, Layer Cake.
But
he
didn't direct Layer Cake. Yeah. He produced it, I think.
You think he should direct it because it would go wrong. Okay, then.
Did some twat rubbish with Madonna.
Oh, God. Oh, that's awful.
Was it Swept Away?
Swept Away. Yeah. Rightfully so, it should be.
Awful. But this film, is great. I think from start to finish, it's one of my favourites. And it's one of my most rewatched films. It really is. If it's ever on telly, I'll never turn it off. Mm. And it's always on fucking ITV too.
Oh, forever.
With Shaun the Dead.
And Hot Fuzz.
But are you on the same page? Love this film?
Oh, yeah, I like this film a great deal. I must admit, I have not seen it in a very, very long time. I think Vinnie Jones is great in this film.
Yeah.
He's so much fun. Is it Bullet Tooth Tony? Is that his character in this film?
I think some of them have got great
names. Or is that
Lockstock?
They all kind of blend to me.
Wait,
but
2 minutes Turkish? Is that Snatch? God, I'm
no, I think that's Lockstock. Oh, I don't know.
It's one or the other.
It's going well, isn't it? It's going well.
This is like Brad Pitt at his coolest.
Yes.
It's my favourite performance that he's done. And he is completely unrecognisable. Like, he's so grimy and you can't understand a word he's saying, but it's just such a cool film. Shame about Richie.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Never mind.
Gemma, what's your first pick?
I've gone for a more modern heist movie. And unfortunately, it is a film we've covered. It's Inception.
Great movie.
Got it. Yay! So it's a groundbreaking film from Christopher Nolan. It's about a thief played by Leo DiCaprio who organises a crack team to intercept a CEO's dream and plant an idea in his head. So like I said, it's a bit of a contemporary take on the whole genre of a heist movie. And they use technology to hack into people's dreams and delve into their subconscious. And when you kind of say it like that, it's such a far out pitch to deliver in a Hollywood mm-hmm. office. It's a miracle this film even got made. You know, you're not going to think about this in the 40s or 60s. Not by a long shot. But it allows Nolan to explore how far the idea can really go. And how can he make this even more nuts than what it already sounds like? I know, it's a dream within a dream within a dream with an enigma wrapped in a riddle with Leonardo DiCaprio. But it all works, doesn't it, Mark?
It's absolutely a masterpiece, genuinely. I loved us when we did it as a rewatch and we did it and compared it to Paprika.
We did.
Yep. And we haven't done that for a while, two films.
We should do that again
in
future.
It's a lot of effort, though.
Yeah, it is a lot of effort.
Even if you do that this time, I'm not going to be happy because I'm on a bit of a rest now. Forget it. But actually, when they interviewed him, they were talking a lot about heist films and he said that the most he's ever watched are always unemotional and very superficial, very glamorous films. And what he wanted to do is offer the audience an emotional narrative instead. So he actually did this whole film as a heist, but put a lot of emotion in there.
Yeah.
And what we see throughout the whole film are the scenes and the flashbacks where we see his dead wife and the memories with
Mal.
Her. And what's her name?
Oh, Marianne Cotillard.
There we go. I would never be able to pronounce that today or any day, to be fair. But the scenes we see in these flashbacks really hit you hard. And I think the way it's shot, it's got like a slightly different filter on it. It's got this like back, and it looks stunning. The film itself is so well done. I've seen the making of as well, and I know I always talk about practical effects, but that whole hallway scene, he built it and started doing it all, and we see these amazing scenes that you think, oh, that's all CGI. They're not. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that he gives that time, the creative team, to actually design these sets, and it works. And when you're watching it back, I'm in awe of this film. Everything about it. There's so many different layers, and we see them skiing on the things, and then we see, it's like a Bond audition.
It is so many different things.
But it's one of the most spectacular films you'll ever see. I fucking love Inception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love Inception too. The only reason why it didn't make my list is purely so I could talk about films I've not done today. It really should be in my top three. Yeah. It's my favourite Christopher Nolan film. It's one of my favourite films ever made. I think it's a flawless masterpiece of a movie.
Doesn't it feel like you're actually in the dream? Mm-hmm. The way how they do ordinary takes where, you know, they're driving in a car in a taxi with the pouring rain in a big city, then all of a sudden this great big train just sort of hurtles through the roads, and you really do get the sense of, okay, well, this is definitely a dream, because there's no way real life could ever happen.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're watching it on screen, it just literally, like, Nolan has literally just planted himself into my brain and gone, sleep well, here you go, bang, Right in the face. A train.
The fingers with Christopher Nolan, I know I big him up because he's my favourite filmmaker. I've said it now for a long time. But what people don't realise is in 30, 40 years, we'll be looking back at stuff like Inception and The Prestige, as we do with Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. I really do. Mm-hmm. He's doing stuff now that lifts the boundaries to a new level. I can't wait to see what he's going to do next because he's always raising the bar. Mm,
yeah. Well, Tenet.
And that's going to be absolutely surreal.
Yeah, I can't wait till we get a full trailer for Tenet because we've only had that brief teaser trailer, haven't we?
Well, this is it. Yeah. Nobody knows what it's about, though.
He's kind of one of those directors that I don't want to know too much about his new films because I want to be blown away. And if there is those twists that we've had with stuff like The Prestige, I don't want it to be ruined. Mm-hmm. He's an actual genius. He really is. Bring it on.
Apart from Interstellar.
It's your topic, Ben, so what's your first choice? If it's Blade Runner, I'm going to flip the table.
Even I couldn't squeeze that one in. That's what she said. My first one is Inside Man.
Oh, wow.
It's Spike Lee's 2006 Wall Street bank heist movie starring Denzel Washington, Clive Owen, Chiwetel Ejiofor and Jodie Foster. One of the reasons why I love this film so much is that Spike Lee usually makes message movies. They're usually films about society and usually revolving around the experiences of black people in the US. This is one of the rare examples where he just makes a straightforward film. It's not a message film per se. It's just great action and great thrills. Now, I assume you guys have both seen Inside Man.
Such a long time ago.
I'm sorry, dude. I've never seen it and I should, shouldn't I?
You'd love it, man.
Yeah.
For real. It's such a good film, isn't it, Jem?
Yeah, you would really
enjoy
it.
It's always in the top. When I did the research, it was in everyone's top 10. Of all time. So I should get on this.
You should. You'd really dig it. And it's a real throwback. It has that kind of 70s Dog Day Afternoon vibe to
it, doesn't it? Nice.
One of the great things that the film does is that it cuts back and forth between the heist taking place effectively live and also then with the interrogations with all the potential suspects later on. So it cuts back and forth. And the thing is, because the guys taking part in the heist are wearing these painter's outfits that cover their whole body, we are as much in the dark as the police are. So when we see them interrogating these people afterwards, we don't yet know whether these people are the actual people conducting the heist or if they were the hostages because we haven't seen what the people doing the heist look like yet.
Okay.
It's a really nice touch, and only as the film begins to progress do we then find out who the actual people involved in the heist were. It's a really very clever film, really visually arresting. The acting is brilliant across the board, but especially Denzel Washington, who typically dominates the picture, as he so often does. He's the lead hostage negotiator. And then Jodie Foster is incredible as well. She's this cold and pragmatic fixer who is referred to by another character, and I quote, as a magnificent cunt.
Wow.
And that really does sum up her character quite well.
Wow. I'm going to bleep that because it's her that said it. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like you saying the word earlier about Irish people, gypsies.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah. I only use that all the time now. Well, someone else said it once, so it's fine.
But this was that era when Clive Owen was making a lot of big movies.
Yeah.
And he just kind of disappeared off the face of the earth for a while. He went away and did a bit of TV. Turns up in the odd shit film, so he was in Valerian a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Shouldn't have to.
But he was a big deal.
He was.
He was nominated for an Oscar at one point.
Yeah, I always get him and Eric Bana mixed up.
And they've got weirdly similar career trajectories, actually. We're both kind of top boys for a while, and then almost fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah. I think when I went to Asda a few weeks ago, there was a lot of his films on like the $3.99 DVDs.
I genuinely thought you'd say, yeah, I saw Eric Bana on the deli.
Oh, no. Working the tills.
Yeah. Looking there, but yeah, it's a shame because he's done some absolutely incredible work, but now he's just doing any old shite. It's a shame, isn't it?
It is a real shame. But you've got to check this film out, Mark. I genuinely think you'll love this. And I remember when we discussed BlacKkKlansman and you saying it was your favourite Spike Lee movie.
Yeah, yeah.
This will challenge it.
Ooh.
You'll watch this and this will shoot right up to the top of the list.
I'm going to. That's my commitment. I did it with The Act.
Mm-hmm.
You
that
did.
Was about 10
you
hours.
Did.
10
did,
hours.
Yeah.
So I'll do it for this.
Have you watched Dead Man's Shoes yet?
I'm saving it for a future rewatch. It's going to be a future rewatch we can all talk about.
Okay. That old chestnut.
Get out of prison. So it's back to you, isn't it, Pooch?
It's back around to Gemma, yeah.
It is. I've gone for a film that I think is incredibly underrated. I would love to bring it back in the future one day. I've gone for the Hughes Brothers' Dead Presidents.
Oh, I've never seen this.
Nor me.
I hadn't seen it until probably not long ago, and this was all down to Mark Kermode's Secret of Cinema special on heist movies.
Ooh.
The way how he described this got my interest piqued, and I love it. So it's an underrated gem which tells the story of a Vietnam veteran, Anthony, who is trying to adjust to normality after the horror he witnesses to provide for his family. And in order to do this, after failing to make as much money as he hopes to make, he decides to get together a number of pals and plan a heist to steal some cash. course, it doesn't run smoothly, because when does a heist properly work? Never. But the reason I love this film, it's a bit of a mixture of genres. Now, the heist doesn't actually happen until towards the third act of the film, so mm-hmm. it's right at the back end. You could argue it and say it's a coming-of-age story about youthful adolescence, of being a black man in the late 60s to being confronted with the barbaric reality of the Vietnam War. You could say it's a war film because of what he witnesses, you know, and it's some pretty messed up, jacked up shit that goes on there. But it also depicts the struggle that Anthony and his friends go through as they see how the American public are disillusioned with the progress in social issues and civil rights of the time. And in order to really break out of the poverty, he's left with no other alternative than to steal money, because he's never going to get that opportunity to get cash on his own. The heist itself is gorgeous. The people that he decides to get together and band, they're all wearing this kabuki-style makeup, so it's white face with sort of black highlighter in the eyes. And you might see it in some of the posters. If you get the chance to like Google it as you're listening to this right now, please do. It is stunning. But it's the whole fall apart of when a plan goes together and it just doesn't. The ending is so visceral, it's so gut-punching, but at the same time, when you look back, you understand why he did what he had to do. It's a wonderful film.
It's been one of those that's always kind of been on a list somewhere that I've been intending to watch mm-hmm. and just never got around to do it.
There is so much to talk about with this film, that's why I'm like trying to condense it into minutes. Mm-hmm. But the way how it's shot, there's one particular shot where he's trying to escape his girlfriend's house and he's jumping over the fences in the backyards, and then it goes straight into Vietnam and he's sort of with a gun trying to run away from gunfire. Mm-hmm. It is beautiful.
I wish we could contribute more, Mark.
I know, I feel
sorry.
Bad.
That's okay.
Seen it. The
that's
only thing right. I can say is when I was in HMV, I saw the cover, which you're talking about, with that amazing image of the black and the white and everything, and it looks amazing.
It does.
It's just one of those films it's not a massive urge to watch it, but I know it's on everyone's list, so I'm not going to commit to that as well. That's too much. I can't take two pieces of homework.
Don't you worry.
I saw it come through a lot, so it must be good.
Nice one.
And if you've picked it, it must be good.
Yeah!
All right, brown noser.
I just thought I'd be nice to her today. Aww. I've been very mean on a few episodes, so let's be nice today. Okay. We're a bit fragile.
We are.
Get me tired and hungover, and I'll be nice to you.
Thanks.
So it's back around to me then. My second choice is Ronin.
Oh my God.
De Niro.
The Robert De Niro film. So have we both seen this?
A long, 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 long time ago.
No, I haven't.
Oh, Lord, Mark. you must take this as homework. You are having to have two bits of homework today. So De Niro stars in a thriller about a group of former special ops soldiers and mercenaries tasked with stealing a mysterious briefcase. The film also features Sean Bean, Jean Reno and Stellan Skarsgård in supporting roles. And it's a very tense movie. And it reminds me a little bit of The Usual Suspects in its tone and its style. But it's really the acting. The story's kind of almost secondary, and this briefcase they're after is a complete MacGuffin. You never find out what's in it. It's kind of like Pulp Fiction. You know there's something good in there, but we never find out what, because it's not about that per se. But it's the acting that really sells this film, especially Sean Bean. He's so goddamn good. He's this shifty, sweaty prick, and he's clearly out of his depth. He's a nobody playing at being a badass. Sadly, he's only in the first half an hour or so of the film because he's found out as being basically a play actor. But he's so good, and he steals the film away from De Niro in the first half. There's also a beautiful relationship formed between De Niro and Jean Reno. They play two... Jean Reno...
Oh. I'd probably
that's
say
closer,
John.
Isn't it?
John.
Do you know, right? I read this the other day. His name isn't even Jean Reno. His name is like Juan something. He's Spanish. But he has like a French name because I think he was brought up in France or something.
That is odd. Yeah, and I've always thought he's French.
Learn something new every day.
There you go.
Yeah. But they play two wise old mercs who they immediately bond and have each other's backs because they've had similar existences. And it's a great little bromance between the two of them that really makes the film. One of the things that this film is most famous for is that it arguably has the best car chase sequences ever committed to celluloid. The participants racing around the streets of Paris and Nice, and they're absolutely fantastic. They're so kinetic, so exhilarating. But the reason why they're so good is they're realistic. This is what would happen if a couple of cars were driving around at high speed around Paris. It's not the wacky shit you see in the Fast and Furious movies. Now, don't get me wrong, I enjoy the chase scenes, but they're not exactly what you would call physically realistic, are they?
I don't know. I mean, if you connect seven trucks and hook it to a helicopter, I can see that happening in Leicester.
Yeah. That's definitely real. That's definitely real. But this film, it seems real, and they're so beautifully, beautifully filmed. It's another film that kind of feels like a throwback as well. It feels like something like The French Connection, one of those old school films.
Cool.
It's so classical and so beautifully put together. There is one thing about the film that I despise, though, and I have discussed this on air before. It's the bit where De Niro is talking to Sean Bean's character, and they're talking about an SAS training ground in Hereford, but Robert De Niro pronounces it as Hereford.
Oh.
And it annoys me that he gets it wrong, but it annoys me more that no one in the production said to him, I know you're one of the greatest actors of all time, but I just need to correct you. There's no such place as Hereford. It's Hereford.
Yeah.
But no one did that. They let him get away with it because he's Robert fucking De Niro.
I bet it was like somebody on work experience, like, mate, you're going to have to tell him,
yeah, okay, yeah, I'll do that. Mr. De Niro,
what is it, you little prick?
Nothing, bye. But the thing is, now he's doing Warburton advert, so I'd be like, oi, bread fucker, get your words right.
Bread fucker.
Yes. Wow.
Bread fucker.
Yes.
That's a new one.
The views of Mark do not represent the entirety of Skip to the End.
If you wonder what you missed at Skip Fest, it was a lot of that. There you go. Just shouting out bread fucker.
Is that how the bagels get the holes in?
Gemma.
Oh my God.
I'm curious.
Oh my God. I was going to say, let's toast to bread fucker, but no, toast and bread fucking should not ever go together. But anyway.
Yeah, that burns.
Ow, my foreskin.
That's too far.
Okay. I don't know how we went from De Niro to bread fucking.
Well.
Because of you. Yeah. You got us there.
There we go. How do you follow bread fucking? A little nap.
I'm so tired.
I am as well. But yes, what you'll be surprised by, Ben, you know I always buy a lot of Arrow DVDs and Blu-rays. Yeah. I fucking love them. They did a special edition of Ronin, so they said...
Who?
Ronin.
Yeah.
Ronin.
Ron. We don't want to get Ronin.
No.
Not again. I've had enough of Ron.
We had him in on Saturday.
I know. You're spoiling a lot of things here. But yeah, they actually released a special edition, which is not like them, is it? They do a lot of horror and hard-to-find films, but it's supposed to be a very good film, so...
And do those Arrow collection ones tend to have, like, behind-the-scenes featurettes
Loads,
and all
that's
that?
All
yeah, that's
do.
What I thought, yeah.
Yeah, commentary.
I might get a hold of that. I'd be really intrigued to watch that.
That'd be awesome.
Excellent. Sorry, bread fucker. Jesus.
Okay.
Oh, I've lost track of all the bread fucking. who's next?
It's me and it's my final one.
Go on, okay. Then.
It's the best Christmas film of all time. Gremlins. No, no. That could be a heist because they hide. No, it doesn't work. No. Die Hard.
Yeah.
There it is.
We love this film and we know that it is the best Christmas. And anyone that says, it's not a Christmas film, go fuck yourself because it fucking is.
Go with the bread, people.
What I like about this as well is just an officer that's trying to save his wife and loads of hostages. It's that simple against a German terrorist. Don't make all these subplots and all this. Keep it simple. This for me is probably Bruce Willis's best ever character. Don't get me wrong, I love stuff like Unbreakable and all that. Those performances are great, but I always imagine him as John McClane.
Yeah.
That's the man he was made to be. This whole film is unbelievable, and when Ben actually revealed that Alan Rickman starred in this as his debut performance for
it was
the
his
best
film,
ever.
Film debut, yeah.
I can't get my head around that. I'm like, what? Because he seems a lot older. He must have been like in his 40s to do his first ever film. But how good is he as a villain?
Oh, he's wonderful. I miss him so much.
I forget he's dead as well. It's tragic. But everything about this film, it's the best way to spend a Christmas. He is the best character in probably cinema history at times. He really is. He's the best good guy, isn't he? If you want a good guy, stick him in a white vest, give him a gun and let him walk around shooting people. That's what I want. That is what
that,
I want.
That does sound like the act of a good guy.
That is the act of a very good guy. But it's the... I don't need to talk about it because we said we would bring films we don't talk about a lot. But Die Hard doesn't need much summary or doesn't need much praising. Everyone's seen it in the world. It was always going to be that. As soon as you announced the topic, I was like, Die Hard.
Okay.
And I can't not have it there.
It's a magnificent film. It's one of my favourite films of all time. Was it our first ever rewatch? I think
Gemma,
this was BG.
Yeah. You should still know.
But you're Skipopedia. You're supposed to know this stuff off the top of your head.
It's definitely like in single figure episodes.
I think
so
it was,
definitely.
You know.
Yeah, I think it was.
And if it wasn't, we're just going to say it wasn't. No one will correct us. And if you are now, you're about to write a tweet correcting us. Fuck off.
You've got it against tweeters. You've got it against bread.
Sorry, bread, for giving you a hammer in.
That's what the bread fucker would say.
Oh, God. So much bread fucking. Right.
Yes.
Poochie.
It is.
Let's go with it.
That's my last one. It's a film I gave love to a long, long time ago, and I've brought it back for this topic. My third choice, and Ben, you mentioned it not long ago, is Dog Day Afternoon.
Amazing.
So good. Al Pacino stars as Sonny, a man who robs a bank to pay for his lover's operation. However, the robbery kind of turns into a media circus. And what's great about this film, you're pretty much there from beginning to end during the heist. But this is a heist that falls apart at the seams, but somehow builds it up as some kind of anti-heroism for Sonny. So what really should be a straightforward heist becomes, you know, a full and hostage situation. And of course, all the news stations come, the cameras come, and they're ready to vilify Sonny, as rightfully so, because guess what? Stealing is wrong. Not condoned in my book, thank you very much.
That's a good message for the listeners out there.
Don't steal, otherwise you'll get glorified in the media. Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. Depending what kind of person you are. But as the film goes on, Sonny starts getting sympathy from the hostages, and a lot of people watching these news programs starts to identify with Sonny, that he's a figure that's against the system, against corporation, against greed. He's a good guy underneath it all, and he really builds himself up by going out and kind of showboating in front of the news circus too.
Attica!
Attica! Attica!
I've not seen it.
Oh, you know what? You will. I think you would really enjoy this, because this is Al Pacino. This is the golden age of Pacino. There's no Dunkachinos in sight. There's no Jack and Jill. There's no Adam Sandler trying to tell him what he should do. This is pure and adulterated goodness.
This was before Pacino. This before he just started shouting in his film.
Yeah, like, ah!
Yeah.
Ah!
That's so shout. It's a bit like Alan Partridge.
Alan Pacino. If Pacino does Partridge, I would frigging love that.
I don't think he's going to.
Shame.
But he did Dunkachino, so anything for a few dollars.
Never have to. Also, as the film goes on, he gets sweatier and sweatier, and it's just the pressure that he's under. He's trying to fulfill his lover's needs by getting the money, but he's also trying to keep his wife on side. He's trying to make sure that the hostages are okay and they're not dying. He's trying to make sure that he's doing right by his mate, but most importantly, he's trying to make sure that he's staying true to himself by getting what he wants. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. It's one of those films that really depicts sort of the poor and rich divide of the 70s, and yet how the media manages to manipulate and the public just see right through it. It is one hell of a film.
It's a very good film, and Pacino's excellent in it, obviously, but John Cazale is incredible in it
as
well.
Yes, absolutely.
And I forget the exact stat, but John Cazale, he died young.
He did.
And it was something like, he only made a handful of films, and something like the first five films he made were all nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, you know, as well as being a good actor, he had a very good agent.
Yeah.
That ain't a bad run, is it? Shame he died, though.
Yeah.
I'm not going to promise to watch it, but I am going to take Inside Man. So I think that's a good commitment. I've got, you know,
yeah,
time to watch
one's
it.
Better than none.
Yeah, exactly. It's an achievement. And Ben, your final choice for today?
My third and final one is 1999's Three Kings.
Oh, wow! Great film.
David O. Russell's film about three American soldiers played by George Clooney, Ice Cube and Mark Wahlberg, who decide to steal millions of dollars worth of Iraqi gold during the Gulf War. So from your instant reaction there, I take it you've both seen it.
Absolutely.
Massive. It's one of my dad's favourite films.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It is a fantastic movie. It manages to be a great heist movie, but also kind of a buddy comedy, but also a searing indictment of American involvement in the Gulf War and its aftermath. And the three leads are incredible together, and it's such an unlikely trio. What casting agent in the world came up with Clooney, Wahlberg and Ice Cube?
And do you know what? Full credit to Ice Cube, because he's up with some heavyweights. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, let's be honest about it. Marky Boy's a great actor, he is. He's done some shit recently, but George Clooney's one of the best.
Yes.
And you think he'd be out of his depth, but I think Ice Cube gives him a performance which is up there with the others.
I agree entirely. And then the fourth man of their party is Spike Jonze.
Yeah.
In what was his first major acting role. And you've got something really special with him, because he's a little weaselly little rat boy.
Such a nerd.
Weasley's the word.
He is. He's very, very funny. I love how the film effectively develops from a film initially about a gold heist to the heroes then deciding that rescuing the Iraqi rebels is more important than the bullion. And the rescue mission effectively becomes its own heist. It's a different heist than we were expecting or we were originally watching, but it becomes the focus of the film. And the ending, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but the ending is really, really moving. You know, when they're getting those people, the Iraqis, to the border. It's absolutely amazing. I think it's a shame that the film, or people's memory or thoughts of the film, is often overshadowed by the behind-the-scenes shenanigans that went on. It's quite famous for there having been effectively a fist fight between David O. Russell and George Clooney on set.
Whoops.
Because O. Russell is known to be something of a little Hitler when it comes to directing.
Right.
But then again, you know, directing is a dictatorship, so yeah. I'm sort of on his side with that. But apparently he was talking down to some extras and Clooney wasn't having any of it, so Clooney got up in his face and they had a bit of a scrap. And they've effectively vowed never to work together again.
That's crazy.
Which is a shame, because they clearly do great work together. Because Three Kings fucking rules, man.
It's an amazing film. And it's I didn't know about that on set.
No, I didn't either.
Now I'm like, okay, now I know why they've never worked together since. But what is he doing now, the director? Has he done anything
David
decent?
Russell, well, he did The Fighter a few years ago.
Yeah,
he
seems
was, to a... was Joy the last one of his?
Yes, it would have been. Yeah,
that would
have
explain
been.
Why then that we haven't had anything. That was shit.
That was crap. But we had American Hustle not long before that, and that was brilliant. Silver Linings Playbook's brilliant as well.
I love Silver Linings.
The thing is, when you work with him, you usually get a contract for life. Look at the cast over the last few films. He just sticks with the people he knows. Yeah. So he must have really fucked him off.
What, clearly?
Yeah, like really bad. But I don't think he's like struggling for work.
No, I think he's doing all right. Yeah.
They did do an advert the other day for some coffee granules. So I was
did
like,
he fuck him?
Yeah.
I think that's a very legitimate question.
Yeah, coffee fucker. Bread fuckers and coffee fuckers. But yeah, good choices.
Yes. Shall we hear what social media said?
Yeah, I'm so tired.
Oh,
me too.
I'll tell you what, you guys sit
we'll
back.
We'll have a nap. Yeah. I know we have to pretend we're listening.
That's right. Well, sit back for a while. Cool.
Just keep going. Great one. Just keep saying that randomly.
Okay, right. You got your superlatives ready?
Excellent. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah,
let's do this. So, Twitter, we got Bearded Hobbit at Bearded Rhino 15 said the town.
Great one.
Excellent. Kelly Searos.
Brilliant.
Catch Me If You Can.
A great film.
There we go. Oh, I noticed what you're doing here. You're going to take it in turns.
Yeah.
You guys.
That's how long we can go.
Okay. Next one. Gareth W. Morgan at the Almighty G said Rafifi.
Excellent film.
As if Mark's ever seen that.
Never seen Rafifi.
Heat.
Yes, tremendous.
Inception.
Absolute masterpiece.
Perfect. Right. John at Emery John AFC said Inside Man.
Quality.
Den of Thieves.
Oh, Sterling choice.
And Rough Cut.
Tremendous.
Okay. Punjab Alchemist at Punjab Alchemist said The Italian Job, the original Italian Job.
Superb.
The Usual Suspects.
Lovely stuff.
And Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, what a marvellous piece of work that is.
Marvellous.
See, let's just interject our silly little game for a minute. See, one of the reasons why I didn't pick Reservoir Dogs, even though it's one of my favourite films of all time, is because it's not really about the heist.
No.
You don't see the heist. You see a couple of tiny flashbacks. It's about the aftermath.
Yeah.
So that's why. I'm not saying it doesn't count. I think it's a fair choice. That's but that's the reason why I didn't put it into my list.
Fair comment. Now, who's next for their next comment?
Be Benefit.
Right, okay. Right, we're going to move to Facebook now, guys. Okay. So we've got Rachel Thomas said, Sneakers.
Oh, amazing.
The Thomas Crown Affair.
Oh, God. Better than the original, in my opinion.
Oh! Now, Rachel prefers slightly the 1999 version to the 1968 version.
Pierce Brosnan.
Who?
Pierce Brosnan.
Who?
Bosman.
No.
Bossman.
No.
Big Boss Man.
No.
Pierce.
Pierce.
Piercy boy! And she also said Three Kings.
Amazing.
Excellent. Ben Sinclair McDonald said Hell or High Water.
Rad. Fuck, actually, that is a fucking great choice.
Wonderful film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Drive.
Dope.
And Snatch.
Fucking ace. I don't know if he's
come on.
Oh, Fresh.
Oh, snap.
I'll tell you what, I forgot about Drive. That's a great
it's a good
choice.
Film, yeah.
It's wonderful. And then finally, we've got Instagram. So James Bottrell at Uncle Bizzle 123 said, Out of Sight.
Sick.
Heat.
Exquisite.
And A Fish Called Wonder.
Tits.
I enjoyed that. Thanks again. And as always, guys, keep them coming in.
It's my topic choice next.
We've got so much left to do.
I don't think you've even got the energy to ask whose it is, so it is mine.
Thank you.
And on the next episode, we're going to have an old-fashioned skip-to-the-end rant.
Yay!
Because it's been a while. So we're going to come back with our top three worst ever movie endings.
Oh!
To my right is Bounty Law series lead and Jake Cahill himself, Rick Dalton. And to my left is Rick Stutt Double Cliff Booth.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. The film visits 1969 Los Angeles, where everything is changing, as TV star Rick Dalton, played by the incredible Leonardo DiCaprio, and his longtime stunt double Cliff Booth, played by Brad Pitt, make their way around an industry that they hardly recognise anymore. This is the ninth film from the writer-director Quentin Tarantino, and features a large assembled cast and multiple storylines in a tribute to the moments of Hollywood's golden age. Thank you, IMDb, as always, for supplying me with the material. Now, this is a huge film, one of the biggest releases of the year by a mile. Mm-hmm. We will be talking about the plot, we'll be talking about the ending, and I really wouldn't want to ruin this for anyone. So if you haven't seen it, go and watch the film in a cinema, come back, and we'll be waiting for you. We even put the times in, you know this by now, so don't moan if we spoil it. Go and do that, and then come back. Ben, you are the biggest Tarantino film I know.
I'm the biggest Tarantino film, you know.
And fan.
He's Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, coming
you're
soon.
The Pulp Fiction ben, of the podcast. Film.
Ben, you are the biggest Tarantino fan I know, so I'm going to throw it straight to you. Was this Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Once Upon a Time in Hollywoodn't?
Superb.
That's terrible.
You can tell he's knackered.
Oh, yes. Bless you.
Let me preface this by saying I thoroughly bloody enjoyed the film. That being said, the first three quarters isn't really a film. There is no story in the first three quarters of the film. It is just a collection of scenes. However, the final quarter of the film, wow, insane.
Brilliant. So, Gemma, was this Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Nonce Upon a Time in Hollywood? That one should have been first.
That was sterling work. It's a love letter to the cinematic world of both Hollywood and Tarantino's own legacy, which feels beautifully nostalgic. I do agree with Ben. It is just nothing really happens in the first quarter. But then again, it doesn't matter because the way how all the stories merge together is stunning. And it's a film I've noticed as each day has passed, I think about it more and more and more.
Yeah.
I dug it.
Brilliant. For me, the first 2 hours felt like a 60s retro trip with outstanding directing. It reminded you of going into a world of Tarantino's love and everything about the cinematography and the imagery and everything. That last 45 minutes is something I could never have predicted. Mm-hmm. It blew my tiny fucking mind, and I have not stopped thinking about how wacky, mental, and just... The change in that was as big as From Dusk Till Dawn. It was insane for me. But I absolutely love this film and I can't wait to see it again.
Yes, it is a film that I've been thinking about constantly for the last week since we went to see it. It, for me, is Quentin Tarantino in full-on fuck-it mode. It's him just throwing everything cool he could think of at the screen. Is there a storyline reason for one of the characters to have a fight with Bruce Lee?
No.
No, but fuck it, it's cool, put it in. That's what he's like. And the first three quarters of the film kind of feel like Family Guy to me, and that's not a compliment. There's just too many flashbacks and cutscenes that just made the whole thing feel really disjointed for me. And it is brilliantly directed, and it is brilliantly acted. I just don't think it kind of hangs together at the start. It's just throwing shit against a wall. But it all comes together at the end.
Yeah.
And you could argue and say this is where Tarantino's talent lies. He's very good at character development. He's very good at laying out all the bits and pieces of what a character is, and then towards the end of the film, they're slowly put together again. Mm-hmm. And I get that with when we're meeting Rick Dalton for the first time. As a Hollywood actor, you get this suave, kind of cool, really great kind of guy in his prime. But as the scene goes on, you realise he's so insecure. He's a spoiled, petulant, tantrum-throwing man-child. And it's something completely alien as to what I've seen in DiCaprio's career. And I was here for it.
Yeah, that's something I want to get straight into. And I know, Ben, it's your favourite actor of all time. Mm-hmm. I don't think you'll see a better acting performance this year on cinema screen. Some of those scenes we saw, even when he's just fucking about and being like cheesy and just chilling in his apartment and all this. But it's the moments that we saw the actual footage being put into the film. He was asking for his lines to be repeated.
Oh.
I was sat there mesmerised. My jaw was on the floor. And I was like, this is Oscar worthy, and he's showing why. And I agree now, Ben, he's the best actor on the planet.
He is. And the scene for me that really got me was, you've just mentioned there, the scene where he's filming that western and he can't get his lines right. He then goes back to his trailer and just berates himself. He's shouting and screaming at himself, shouting in the mirror, and it's extraordinary from DiCaprio. It's so powerful.
I love the bit before that. So when we are watching the scene being filmed and he messes up and says line, he's thrown immediately. And what makes Rick so mesmerizing to watch, he has these little tics. Now, he has these little tics with his eyes. He constantly keeps clearing his throat and he has a slight stutter throughout the whole film. And you just seem to just see like a little thread just slowly being pulled. And it gets greater and greater and greater until, as Ben's just mentioned, that scene where he just explodes. I love the little detail and nuances that DiCaprio brought to Rick.
And that's really important, those tics, the stutter and the nervous sort of twitchy eyes, because he only has that when he's kind of feeling pressured or put upon. Mm-hmm. When he's acting, when he's in the flow, he doesn't stutter, he doesn't twitch. When he's feeling confident, like at the end of the film, after the events of the finale, which we'll discuss in a bit, when he's talking to the neighbour, again, no twitching. Yeah. He's confident. But it's when he's feeling down or pressured, that's when he starts twitching. It's brilliant.
Remember when he's meeting Al Pacino's character at the beginning at Frank and Musso's, mm-hmm. and he starts just slightly hanging on particular words, and you go, oh, is he might have a stutter, I'm not too sure. But you're right, that insecurity starts to engulf him.
Yeah, it's a nervous twitch.
Mm. It's amazing, man. And like, you see that scene where he's you know, he's smashing up the place and he's really angry, but you just see him in the mirror, that reflection. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yes, I'm never going to drink again. And he picks up a drink and the same thing. But what he did in the film that I've not seen him do for a long time is make me laugh. Mm-hmm. So as serious as these scenes are, and we see the breakdown and him question his whole career, there's moments where him and Brad Pitt are literally making me laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. And I was literally sat there like, the chemistry between them two was phenomenal. And you know what it's going to be like working with Tarantino on set. It would be an absolute delight. You know you're going to have the best time ever. But those two for me are like, they are genuinely good friends and they have been for years. Their chemistry was phenomenal. And that's what I want to go to. Cliff Booth, man. Brad Pitt stole the film for me at moments, you know, and he's again up against people like Al Pacino, who you've mentioned, and Leonardo DiCaprio, and he's like, yep, I can do this.
He's so cool and calm and in control. He's a legit badass, and the best example of that for me is when he goes to the Spahn Ranch, and you've got all those dirty hippies there, the Manson family around, and all he's worried about is seeing if George Spahn is around and is safe and not being taken advantage of, and he doesn't know what's going to go down. He doesn't know who these people are, if they've got weapons or, you know, if they have bad intentions, but he doesn't let them cow him. He never becomes nervous. He just, no, I'm going in that room. Oh, you can't go in there? I'm going in.
Yeah.
He's so calm and cool and in control at all times.
I think Brad Pitt is severely underrated in how good of an actor he really is. Mm-hmm. He's masterful at developing these characters and making them so recognisable, especially in his back catalogue. Now, if you think about how DiCaprio is playing this really sort of jittery, kind of like, I'm still relevant kind of character, the same could, I suppose, could be said for Brad Pitt in this one. So we do see him very neutral and calm, just like a real nice, well, not really a nice guy. He might have killed his wife. But he has a really great rapport with Rick. But as soon as he goes away from Rick and you see him driving all the way down to his trailer with his dog, and he's slobbish. He's kind of uncouth. He doesn't really care about how he looks, how he feels, like the surroundings. He's a real lazy piece of shit when you think about it. And again, but this isn't the Brad Pitt that we're used to seeing.
No.
I really love the fact that Tarantino managed to get these two great actors who, let's be honest, I would love to see more of them two starring, and get something that we as an audience haven't really seen previously.
Mm-hmm. He looked a force as well, doesn't he? Anytime anyone got on the wrong side of him, you just wouldn't.
Like a unit.
That's the word.
Yeah.
But that scene you were talking about, when we first get to see this kind of, it felt like a horror. It felt like The Hills Have Eyes,
yes,
where he visited this kind of inbred, weird. That was where the film tone changed for me. And I was like, oh, this is going somewhere completely different. And the way he was being watched, and it was like a Western with the dust under his feet going into this house. I was genuinely frightened. I didn't know what he was going to find. And we all saw him kind of leading towards this character. We wanted to see this old man in a bed who was blind. And I was thinking to myself, what is he going to find? It was a genuine concern. It was creeping me out. And that's why I was quite excited when Tarantino over the last few weeks has been saying he would love to do a horror. Because I was like, if you can take that and give me that suspense and that feeling for a couple of hours, you'd be an absolute master at it.
Yeah.
So good.
I also want to shout out to another scene stealer during that part of the film. So Margaret Qualley as Pussycat. I think she's been in some TV shows previously.
Yes, she was in The Leftovers, which is a great show.
There we go. Now, I really enjoyed her, because talk about layers to a character, she's probably the best example. So when we first meet her, we only see her in fleeting moments with her and Cliff, where he just sees her hitchhiking, but the previous two times he's not going the way that she wants to go. The third time, bingo, they're in the car. And you realise that she's not just this sort of mysterious, enigmatic woman. She's 16 years old, she's underage, and she lives with a bunch of people? Where's this going?
It was weird, man.
Yeah, only the most notorious, fucked up cult in American history, which was the family.
Mm-hmm. She's brilliant in this film, and I think she had the best of all the female roles. Now, a lot of talk's been had about, obviously, the film co-starring Margot Robbie, but she's barely in it. Mm-hmm. And even when she's on the screen, she barely has any lines, which I don't think is as big a problem as some reviews have made out, because I think she's meant to be something of an ethereal presence. I think if you give her too many lines, it takes away from the ethereal nature of who Tarantino wanted to present Sharon Tate as being.
I could not agree with you more. It's more of an angel, because of, you know, ultimately Sharon Tate's real life fate, which is horrific and so tragic. But yes, she's almost like this kind of heavenly presence.
Yeah,
I completely agree.
And I think I don't feel cheated, because I wouldn't just go and see a Tarantino film for the cast members, because you get so much more when you buy a ticket to go and see a film with his. But I was like, shit, man, you're in the film for probably 15 minutes, if that, and the film's getting on for 3 hours. But just talking about Margaret, did you know that she's Andy McDowell's daughter?
I did know that, yeah.
And that blew my mind. Yeah. I was like, fuck. What? But she's going to go on and have a great career, because she was phenomenal, man.
How do you switch from being this cute, kind of flirty girl to an utterly terrifying, soulless being who all of a sudden can switch like a light very, very quickly?
Those characters on that site, some of the people were in there, like, they're not known actors, but they fucking made me fucking like sit there literally quiet. I felt uneasy. I just felt like these people are going to cause damage. But then we go straight to Cliff, who just doesn't take any shit and beats the living fuck out of anyone that gets in his way. And no one's going to stop him. If you puncture his car, your face is going to look like a mashed up cherry pie. It was horrendous, wasn't it? The violence. And that's when you start getting the violence we wanted.
The Tarantino violence. Yeah. That whole scene, everything that takes place on the Spartan Ranch is amazing. The one thing that took me out of it was that talentless fuckwit Lena Dunham. Fuck you, Lena Dunham. What are you doing in a Tarantino film with your wooden half-assed acting? Ruined it for me, that did.
Yeah, perhaps to show him some money or something. Like, it's a weird one, isn't it?
I wasn't bought, I'm afraid.
She sucked.
Sorry, Lena.
So come on then, Ben. You were talking at the start about how the last kind of, 45 minutes just takes it to a new level. This was, I don't think any of us, because we don't spoil films for ourselves, we weren't prepared for this.
No.
We had no idea what was coming. I'd read a few reviews, all of which said the ending is bonkers. But I didn't have quite any idea of how bonkers it was going to be. So, massive spoiler alert, as we've said. So essentially, the Manson family, who in real life went and killed Sharon Tate, her unborn child, and her house guests, in this film instead attack the people living in the house next door, which is Cliff and Rick.
Yeah.
And Cliff and Rick then straight up murder them dead.
Yeah.
In one of the most extraordinary scenes. And we'll talk about some of the specifics of that scene in a minute. But the first thing I want to say is, whilst it is brilliant and insane, the ending, it is Tarantino effectively repeating his own trick from Inglourious Basterds.
Yep.
In Inglourious Basterds, he rewrote history to have the good guys kill Hitler.
Yeah.
And in this film, he's rewritten history to have the good guys kill the Manson family and for Sharon Tate to survive. So it's great, it's brilliant, it's funny and unexpected, but it is him repeating a trick he's used before.
It's also quite sad when you think about it, because you're willing for these awful, awful people to just meet violent ends, rightfully so. But it's also really sad because it didn't happen, and the murder of Sharon Tate is probably one of the most disturbing acts that's ever happened in American history. It's hard reading exactly what happened to her. So you kind of wish that did actually reflect reality.
And the thing that's amazing about the scene of the three Manson family members attacking Rick and Cliff and Rick's new wife in their house is, for all that it is this gory, violent scene, it's also really funny. It's almost presented as almost kind of slapstick. There's one bit where one of the Manson family attackers is coming at Brad Pitt with a knife, and he has a can of dog food in his hand, and he just pitches it at her face, and it's fucking hilarious.
Doesn't it cave in too?
And it shouldn't be.
Everyone in the audience was laughing.
Because you weren't ready for this. And then suddenly it just turned into a well over the top Tarantino blood gore fest, and then I think he was smacking in the face about 10 times into the phone, and then on the worktop, and it was the word is brutal.
Also, shout out to Brandy the dog, who took one for the team, didn't she? Mouthful of knackers.
As a guy sitting there watching that, you can only just imagine the pain. But then instead of just biting them off, it was like gnawing away his crotch, and I was just thinking, fuck.
Like a tasty sausage casserole.
I think something that Tarantino did brilliantly is establish early on in the film about how well controlled he is. So the dog sat there waiting for his food, but doesn't dare go for the food until Brad Pitt kind of goes, whistles for him to do it. So it establishes that, and you think that's just a throwaway thing. But that comes into play in the fight scene at the end, when you think that Brad Pitt's outnumbered by these attackers, and then he just gives a little whistle, and the dog attacks. It's so good.
Mouthful of bollocks.
Who was the guy that played Manson?
Damon Herriman. We only see him in one scene.
Yeah, I liked him. I thought he was quite fucked up. Yeah.
If you like his performance, watch second season of Mindhunter. That's all I'm going to say.
Because he plays the same character, doesn't he? Yeah.
I want to see more. And I will check that out. And that's on Netflix now, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah.
That's tomorrow sorted for you, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, back to the deaths, right? Also, wasn't it great to see Maya Hawke?
Yes, in a brief role, yeah.
Yeah, and again, it's like watching Beatrix Kiddo, the spirit of Beatrix Kiddo, pop up in this 1960 kind of setting scene. But it was the flamethrower. You know what?
So
if we're going to point out what our favourite deaths were, I think Rick realising that, oh shit, my house is getting invaded, and he just goes to a shed, picks up his flamethrower, which he argued earlier on the film that it was too hot.
Yeah.
He used that, didn't he? He burnt that motherfucker down.
Singed would be an understatement of the year.
Well done. If it was on the stakeometer.
It was horrendous.
It was horrendous, but incredibly funny.
It was hilarious.
And again, it was Tarantino setting something up early in the film. It was Chekhov's flamethrower that we saw in the first act, and then we knew it was going to be used by the third. It's absolutely brilliant stuff. And I want to go on a little serious tangent at the minute. One of the criticisms I've seen levelled at this film, especially in regards to the finale, is the level of violence against women. Which, in principle, I agree, is a horrendous thing, and we do see too much of it in film.
Yeah.
I would defend Tarantino in this particular film, because it's not as if these were just lovely, friendly women who have been beaten up for no reason. These women are Susan Atkins and Patricia Krenwinkel, the women who in real life murdered Sharon Tate and her unborn baby and her houseguests.
Yeah.
So seeing those guys get fucked up, I don't see why we can be happy with watching Hitler get murdered in Glorious Bastards and not be happy about watching these lot get hit in the face with dog food and get burnt with a flamethrower.
Excellent
because they're
point.
Subhuman scumbags.
Yeah,
I saw something about how some of the female family members were portrayed as these witches, as these kind of really dowdy matriarchal characters. But again, these people agreed to go into somebody's house and butcher them.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't have any sympathy for these women. These women were fucks.
I'm watching the actual scene where she's being burnt alive, and then kind of she had this like scream and yell.
Yeah, and it continued.
And did it a few times. Mm. And I was literally wetting myself because it was so comical. And she's like, and it just was stupid, splashing around.
Yeah, yeah,
and I was like, there's Tarantino just giving us what he gives us best.
Who
else can make you laugh by watching someone burning alive in a swimming pool with a flamethrower?
Insane. There are a couple of other minor negative things I want to pick up. I think because Tarantino is Tarantino, no one can tell him what to do, which is a shame because I think someone needs to tell him to edit. Because this film is too long, needlessly. There are so many scenes of people driving.
Yeah.
Literally just driving around Los Angeles with 1969 music playing on their car stereo. And it's great the first couple of times, but by the 25th time, I'm like, just cut it out.
Has he got a deal with Uber?
Quite possibly.
It was way too much. It felt like I was watching Outrun, the movie. Because he has that really nice shot, doesn't he, that he's known for, of the back of the head driving. We see it in most of his stuff. And it works, but like you said, storyboarding, so right, the guys are now going to go into town. Why not just go from that the house and then the next scene's the town? We had to follow them down the hill and round the road and round the corner. And I was like, that cool. But I think genuinely every journey they took, we had to be with them in the back of the car.
Even like the party scene at the Playboy house, I think it was just to say that she was an up and coming star.
Yeah.
But that could have been dealt with differently, maybe.
That scene didn't need to exist where we were introduced to Damian Lewis as Steve McQueen, who literally had two lines.
Yeah.
Why get Damian Lewis in, like an Emmy winning actor in, to play Steve McQueen, one of the legends, and have one line at a Playboy party? Get rid of it.
I bet he loved it, though. I bet he's like, I'm in another Tarantino film. This is pretty good for me.
Yeah.
But I did, Ben, this is going to probably annoy you.
Mm-hmm.
I read the other day that they're going to do a 4-hour cut, which is going to go onto Netflix and do the style of The Breakdown, you know, like they did with his other films.
No, that wouldn't annoy me. That'd be great, because if these scenes, like the Playboy party, had more to them that made them integral to the story, then I want to see the fuller version.
Cool.
There's no point having a half-assed version that has no value. Show me a full version that has some meaning.
Well, rumors are we're getting it in when it comes out on the streaming channels as the ultimate cut.
Something that I thought was an odd decision is one of the biggest scenes that Sharon is in, or Margot Robbie, is she goes to the cinema to watch one of her own films, and the footage they show on screen is of the real film. It's of the real Sharon Tate.
That's right.
Which I thought was an odd directorial choice, because earlier on in the film, there's a bit where Leonardo DiCaprio's character we see him appear in The Great Escape, and they've used camera trickery to put Leonardo DiCaprio in the real film, and it's flawless. It's perfectly matched. So if they did that for that, why didn't they put Margot Robbie into her film, and rather than having the real Sharon Tate, it seemed odd to go one way for one thing and another way for the other.
Or was it Tarantino paying homage to Sharon Tate to get her face across a modern audience?
I quite possibly, but it just seems odd to use the technology once and then not again.
Because it works so well. Tarantino, I literally was watching it thinking, God damn, that's worked too good. Mm-hmm. Usually like that looks a bit shit.
Yeah. It's like, how's he done that?
I know.
Little one.
He's pretty talented, that's why.
Did anybody stick around for the after credit scene?
Yes. We did, didn't
we? Yay, excellent stuff. People I've spoken to haven't. Oh, what a little nod to the Tarantino world of the Red Apple cigarette advert with good old Rick. Hilarious.
The bit where the director yells cut on the advert, and then he just starts laying into everyone and smashing the little stand-up picture of it.
Don't
and
even
all
like
that.
This picture.
That's one thing about the film. For some reason, since I just want to smoke. You know, it's like watching Mad Men and wanting to drink. Like, I just, every scene they were smoking all the way through. And let's be honest, our dad was in this film, narrating quite a lot.
Yeah.
And it was great to see our dad looking so well for his age. He's just killing it, isn't he, again?
He'd look fit.
Kurt Russell is amazing. I didn't really see the value of his voiceover, though, because it was intermittent. We had a little bit of it near the start of the film, and then a massive chunk of it 2/3 of the way in, and then it kind of disappeared again.
Yeah.
And again, to me, it's just Tarantino throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah. I'm pretty much done with this, and I want to know the score. Yeah. So as I threw it to you first, Ben, what's your score for this one?
So up until that final act, I was sitting there in the cinema thinking, I'm loving the acting, I love the direction, but there's no real plot. So I was going to give it a 7. The craziness of the finale has bumped it up a whole number grade for me. So I am going to give it an 8, although I do believe, because I've spent so much time thinking about it, and I will watch it again as soon as I'm physically able, I imagine in time it will probably go up to a 9.
Nice.
But at the minute, it's an 8 out of 10.
What about you, Poochinder?
This film certainly has divided people 50-50. You either love it or you hate it. I really enjoyed this. I'm very excited to see it again. And I, too, am going to give it an 8 out of 10.
I echo everything you've said. I will genuinely go and watch it again in the cinema. I know it's not going to be on for long because it was only 2 showings when we saw it on opening weekend.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's what happens because everyone else is seeing fucking Fast and Furious. So I'm going to also give it an 8. So overall, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood gets a skip to the end. 8 out of 10. It's competition time!
That was pretty good for someone with a sore throat who's knackered.
My throat's not that sore, Ben, because I've got vocal zone throat pastels.
All right, Adele.
They're not great, to be honest. They've not done much. It's just like a posh fruit pastel. You can win those, no chance. So what we do at this section of the podcast is announce the winners from the last episode. So Last Exit came along because we had Event Horizon for our rewatch, and they gave us the Lewis and Clark t-shirt. All we said was, who directed the Event Horizon movie?
Paul W.S. Anderson.
Brilliant. Imagine if it was actually Paul Thomas Anderson.
That
would have
been
a great
amazing
film. At Dark Reed is going to get that in the post. This is one of his favourite films of all time, he said. So, you know, that's how you're going to win prizes.
Oh, shut the front door.
We also had a t-shirt for The Thing, and the competition we put out there, which changed on the day, was to draw a dick. So, Ben, I'm going to pass this to you,
okay. And
I want you to judge and tell me what the winner's name is, and try and describe the penis in a bit more detail for me.
This is extraordinary.
What?
So it's a big old shaft with a couple of hairy balls, a big squirting end, and wings, inexplicably.
Yes.
And some great vein work there, and it's been drawn by Charlotte Ralph Gledhill, and it's incredible and disgusting.
I know. And you did ask for a good detailed
I did.
Shaft. So
I got what I asked for. Yeah.
Is it jizzing?
It is jizzing.
There we go. So we'll put that on social media after the episode goes out, but Ben was very impressed with that. Look at that.
I don't get the
wing.
Did you
get that as a tattoo?
Yeah, on my forehead.
Yeah, foreskin. But it's nice, isn't it?
I like the detail of shadowing.
And if you zoom in, it actually says, dick to the end.
Wow.
Beautiful. All that for a t-shirt, madness. we'll chuck you something else in as well. I think it's worth it for that.
We got any tat left over from Skipfest?
You mean really nice prizes?
Yes,
we'll send you the bag. But she was actually at Skipfest.
Ah.
So thanks again for the lovely dick. Anyway, thanks to our friends at Richer Sounds. They gave us a JBL amazing set of headphones, which are Bluetooth. So none of these wires we used to get back in the day. we put out there the best movie score. And Chewymon said The Empire Strikes Back by John Williams.
Oh, what great pick. Banger!
You'll be getting those in the post. Finally, and we are going to have to give these away as much as I want to keep them, because Sully does want to keep track. We had a full set of the Office Funko Pops.
Oh, let's not give them away.
And we said, what was your favourite character from The Office? And Michelle Bennett on email has said, the Nard Dog, Andy Bernard. I don't think I could actually answer that one, so fair play. But what a great set of Funkos. And since this episode's gone out, they've released even more. So we've got, like, Date Mike.
Kevin with the pot of chili.
I just want them all. Yeah. That's the problem. That's the thing. If I do start collecting those ones, I'll get the whole lot, and then I have time to buy all the fucking rare ones and everything.
Yeah, I'll bankrupt myself.
As it's episode 126, the topic is heist movies. All the prizes up for grabs today will be heist-related. So first of all, Factory Entertainment have come along, and they're at factoryent.com, and they've given us the most expensive prize we're ever going to give away at this point of this podcast. We've got from James Bond a golden eye prop replica of the lens. Look at this. It's $500.
Holy shit.
That's insane. And some collectors out there love stuff like this because it's so hard to get. So I think we should make it really simple. Who plays James Bond in GoldenEye? That's a hell of a prize for an easy question.
Yeah.
Last Exit have come along and they've given us, for their favourite heist films, a t-shirt for The Italian Job.
Oh.
So let's keep it simple. Who directed that? Oh. Really, really simple.
We're talking about the original.
Yeah, the original. Okay, okay. Great film. And they've also given us a t-shirt for Reservoir Dogs. Now, I want to make this a bit more of a challenging question. So Harvey Keitel plays, is it Mr. White, Mr. Orange, or Mr. Blonde? That's a bit trickier than just, you know, what?
Yeah, well,
is it?
No. And Funko have come along and given us a set of Baby Driver Pops, because that is a heist film. Not the best.
No.
We didn't like that film either.
I loved you.
The editing is absolutely unbelievable.
We both gave it 8.
Yeah, but I gave Mac and me an 8, so it doesn't mean shuffle. Let's say, who directed Baby Driver? I just said. Die Hard Pops, John McClane is played by who? And finally, we've got the set of Ant-Man and the Wasp set, which is really nice. How old is Paul Rudd? That's the hardest question in the world.
Yeah. Silly answer. He's limitless.
He looks so good.
Age does not apply to Paul Rudd.
It's insane. But what we'll do, we'll come back and announce all the winners on our next episode.
Is that how you describe your job, Cliff?
What, carrying his load? Yeah, it's about right.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot, which is a director, and we talk about our favourite film from that particular person. On the last episode, we picked out Mr. Richard Linklater. A lot of a lot of alliteration.
We're getting very tired.
We are knackered.
But you said the name right.
Thank you.
And that's not an easy one to say.
It isn't, especially when, you know, you're still on the high of Skip Fest.
But it's a come down now.
So it's not a vast amount of films from this particular dude, but I think we're going to have some good ones that we can actually talk about. So Mark, I'd like to throw this one to you first. What's your favourite?
We talked about it on the last episode. It's Dazed and Confused. Probably the most obvious one. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I talked about it for about 15 minutes on the last episode because it made my topic. But it's a high school film set in the 1970s and it's about a final day in your high school. So it's full of... It felt like I think I said this last time, it felt like a documentary. It's that sort of style. I think they get it really well done because it looks authentic. The stoner story's done to death in film, but I think this is one of the first that does it so well. The soundtrack is absolutely fantastic. We've got a great cast. Adam Goldberg, one of my favourite actors. He's so fucking cool. Matthew McConaughey in the early days, and a very early Ben Affleck. It's done so well that it looks like the 70s. It's not like over-the-top afros and these stupid over-the-top suits. It's just done well and authentic, and I think it's got a feel of a 70s film. It's a standard sort of school film where you get the jocks at the party, you get the bullies, you get the feminist teacher, you get the hot girls, you get the cool guys, but also those kind of geeks that have their own little crowds. And all those characters, when you went to school, you can relate to. They're in everyone's school. It's an awesome film from start to finish. and it was only one choice for me. It's the easiest movie masturbate I've ever done. Days Confused all day long.
Is that because you haven't seen any other Richard Linklater films other than that and Boyhood?
I've not seen the Sunset Before Whatever It Is trilogy.
Before Sunset.
But I've seen School of Rock.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
So those three. But this one for me stands so far above the rest.
Yeah.
I'd probably be Boyhood next, but yeah, that's the easiest one ever, dude. Has he done any more? I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah. You know my thoughts on this film.
Yeah.
I don't hate it, but I don't particularly like it.
No.
Not really my cup of tea.
Yeah, it's pretty much everything you don't like in a film.
I'm kind of with Mark. I really enjoyed this film. This is a long, long, long film.
Yeah.
But you're right. It really does feel like the authentic time of the 1970s, even down to like what they're wearing and the music and the whole feel of the film. I think it's quite good.
It's great.
Yeah.
Ben, what have you got? Come on, Gemma, you gotta signpost into, let's see what Ben's got.
So moving on from Mark to Ben.
Oh. Such a professional operation.
Yes. Right.
I've gone for A Scanner Darkly.
Very Lovely. Good.
Have either of you seen A Scanner Darkly?
Yes.
Yes.
You have, you both have.
Yeah.
You just said you haven't seen any.
I genuinely forgot because it's so different to anything else.
It is so different to anything else he's done. And also, I am surprised that you've both seen it because it flew under the radar. It's a film that not a lot of people have seen in my experience. It's Linklater's take on the novel by Philip K. Dick, and it revolves around a dystopian near future where a drug epidemic is sweeping the globe. And the film stars Robert Downey Jr., Winona Ryder, Woody Harrelson, and Keanu Reeves as an undercover cop who's starting to lose his mind. The whole film is as weird as hell, and it's very much an acquired taste. I can imagine people watching it and being like, this is wank.
No.
I get that. But it's known mainly for Linklater's choice to use rotoscope animation. If you're not familiar with rotoscoping, what that is it's the process of taking a live-action film and then essentially tracing over the footage to then animate it. And it's a bold decision, but a brilliant one in this film, in my opinion, because a lot of it involves people having drug trips. So these trippy visuals, using the animation, it's a great way to represent the drug-fueled madness and the paranoia in the story. There's a moment, for example, where Reeves sees Harrelson and Downey Jr.'s characters turn into giant bugs, which is easy to do from an animation perspective. It would have been a lot harder or more expensive to pull that off in a live-action film.
Yeah.
So it's very smart, a very clever way of being able to get to the parts of the story he needed to get to. The craziest visual in the film, though, are the things called the scramble suits. So these are things that undercover cops wear. They kind of zip over their whole body. It's like a full body condom thing that they zip over them. And it makes their appearance constantly change. And it's not just their face changing from one face to another. All the four quadrants of their face are constantly changing between different people. And their outfits are continually scrolling and cycling. And again, this really wouldn't have been possible in a live-action film, or it would have taken very expensive CGI to pull this off, whereas the animated version is a lower fi way of doing it and a less expensive way of doing it, but it works brilliantly, doesn't it? It looks amazing.
Oh, it's amazing. I remember watching this at university, and I remember thinking as soon as I'd finished watching it, this means I'm really cool. It was one of those underground films that really nobody had really even heard of, but somebody introduced it to me and I just thought I was like the coolest bitch on campus. Turns out I wasn't.
It's only just come out on Blu-ray because HMV have just released a special edition finally.
Are you
so
kidding me?
For HD glory, it's great.
Oh,
but I'm glad you told me what it's called because I didn't know what that kind of form of animation is called.
Yeah.
But it's fucking spectacular. No one else has really done it since as much. You don't see it as well.
It's rare, yeah.
It's such a good art and it's... It takes a bit to adjust. Like when you watch it for the first time, you're like, I don't know if I like this. It's the way it moves and stuff. And I think the frame rate's very odd.
Yeah.
But it looks spectacular. And I think... It's a Marmite film, it really is, but I loved it. I've only seen it once, but I remember just watching it, like you said, that some of the sequences with the drug stuff, it's you would never be able to recreate it normally.
I think there's something, it's not obviously a direct rip of this, but I know that there was a Vincent van Gogh animated feature, I think about a year ago, that did something very similar,
and
it used the works of Vincent van Gogh and kind of incorporated that with live action, but somehow drew on top of it, just like Linklater did.
Right, okay.
But it's, I've not seen it yet, but it is something that I really want to
That's interesting. But this film was a real labour of love for Linklater. It was made on a tiny budget of under $10 million, for which Harrelson and Ryder were paid scale, which is effectively Hollywood minimum wage, because they believed in the story so much and really wanted to work with Linklater. And, you know, just think of that as a cast, Downey Jr., Ryder, Harrelson and Reeves. That's an incredible cast of, like, 90s killer actors who are still doing it to this
absolutely.
Very day. And the true star is Robert Downey Jr. He's this kind of motor-mouthed, little Weasley man. He's so good in this film.
It's a film I'm definitely going to revisit because I'm going to buy the special edition. It's like the HMV did this limited range where they bring out films you forget about. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy it because I think it's going to look fucking ace on Blu-ray.
Oh, it will.
Oh, great choice. I completely forgot that's him because it's just so out of touch. We're not on the same page today.
I know. This has not happened in a while, has it? My God, we were thinking this is going to be a really short segment. Never mind. Well, my choice is something a little bit more recent, which is Boyhood.
Yes.
Starring Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke, and it follows the life of Mason from a young boy to his arrival at college. And, of course, I'm a sucker for little things that make films special. And what makes this film special is this took 12 years to make, produce, and edit, and release. So rather than cast a young kid and recast Mason with an older character later on, Linklater used the exact same cast throughout the story. And that doesn't just apply for the main kid, it applies for the siblings and, of course, to Hawke and to Arquette. And when probably coming up with the idea, it's one of those things where it probably looked really, really good on paper, but part of you might have just not been bothered or been asked to complete it and go, well, we had a good run. We did about 3 months, never mind. But there's also the challenge to remain or identify the character you're playing for 12 years too. And this is absolute credit to everybody involved, you know, especially Patricia Arquette, who went on to win the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress, and rightly so. And her story throughout the film is a real hardship and hard work. You know, she's separated from Hawke's character. You know, she's got kids with him, but they have to maintain a civil relationship. But of course, she doesn't really go through a lot of nice looking guys or nice treated guys. You know, they knock her about a bit, they cheat on her, they're very, very awful to her. But to hold the essence of who the mother is for 12 years, that's some serious acting lady balls right there. But Linklater also reflects the pop culture that goes through the 12 years that we watch. And it really gets you in the frame of mind as to what year you're watching. So you get the really awful fashions of the mid-2000s. You also get the hype and obsession with Harry Potter. It isn't a rewatchable film, though. And this is, unfortunately, the disadvantage of Boyhood. But it's a film that I do believe that everybody needs to see at least once because it really is remarkable filmmaking. It's a remarkable story. And like I said, the fact that these actors have maintained a character for such a long amount of time is wonderful.
Yeah, I think you're right about the rewatch element of it. I think it's one of those that you see to be able to say that you've seen it and experience it, but I wouldn't go away and watch it again. I don't love the film. I like it a lot, and I like it as a formal experiment. I think it's a very clever, out-there idea and out-there concept. One of the great things is, because it follows these people over the course of 12 years, you see the kid grow up, for one thing, but the adult characters, you see them change, like things just like basic weight fluctuation, that as we all know happens as you get older. Yeah. Just seeing that, it makes it seem more real.
Yeah.
It's really well put together. It's a great idea and well executed. Mm-hmm. And Patricia Arquette is one of my favourite actors working.
She is the man.
She can do no wrong.
Can you imagine getting the contract for this film? So when's it due out? 12 years' time. It's a hell of a commitment.
Yeah. And
I know it sounds awful and a bit morbid, but you're taking a lot of risks. So you're 9 years into the film and one of the actors could die or get ill or anything could happen to them. Or, you know, it must be insane to actually commit that.
Yeah, I'd imagine they must have demanded their money up front.
Yeah. I actually watched this film on a plane when we went to New York.
Mm.
I was sat by you. I think you were having a kip or watching something else or some telly. And it felt like a really surreal thing to get on a plane and watch someone's whole life for 12 years during a flight.
Yeah.
But it was a perfect little video. Even though it was only a small screen with my headphones in, I was properly indulged for 3 hours. It's a long film. But because you see this 12-year life, I'll be honest, it feels a lot longer. It's like you've really invested in these people and the characters and seen it all, but that's a one-off. You're never, ever going to get a commitment like this to screen again, are you?
Even with the diverse soundtrack, you know, you can go from Britney Spears to Arcade Fire. It really does span it so well.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, an awesome film, and it's nice to see we've got three different choices.
Indeed.
Yes, but I wasn't expecting that.
Talking about choices, I want to know what social media came up with.
Well, it's funny you should ask. On Twitter, Fran, at Franny Elizabeth, has said, Before Sunrise, one of my absolute favourite films.
It's Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy?
It is.
Everyone says this film's amazing. It's a three-parter, isn't it? It's just a hell of a commitment.
Hey, well, you talk about commitment, some actors did it for 12 years.
Yeah. Following on from that one, on Instagram, we've got Adventures of Beansprout, and they've said Before Sunset, which was the follow-up film. Phenomenal writing and characterisation.
Okay. We've not seen it, have we?
No, but people say it's one of the best trilogies. It's absolutely phenomenal. But Ben will never watch it.
No, not in a million.
Not
although I have seen, I think, I'm sure I've seen most of the third one because it was just on Sky once. And
so you know the ending.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
On Facebook, Jack McGill has said, if it isn't Dazed and Confused, you're wrong.
Well, thanks, Jack.
So Jack's with you, Mark. Ben Reed at Dark Breed has said, Tape, a superb character-driven mystery starring Uma Thurman, Ethan Hawke and Robert Sean Leonard. The entire thing is set in one motel room and is totally engrossing.
I've never heard of it.
Me neither.
No.
But it sounds cool.
It sounds very cool.
Great cast. Bryn Pritchard on Facebook agrees with me. He said, A Scanner Darkly, a wonderful dark tale about drug addiction and psychosis. He even managed to extract a good performance from Keanu.
What?
That's criminal at the
moment. He is a precious soul.
He can do no wrong. He could walk into the street, kill a child, and everyone would be like, that's incredible. Because everybody loves him. He's anything he's doing right now. But seeing the on-set pictures from Bill and Ted 3 with his freshly... Because you only see him with a beard or stubble. Yeah. He looks incredible. I can't wait.
That's going to be amazing.
He's so breathtaking.
On Twitter, Anna Pink at Anna247 has said, School of Rock, I don't rate any of his others.
Oh,
that's
what?
Anna telling it like it is.
Yeah, good film though.
And then finally on Facebook, Lee Morgan has said, Boyhood, an incredible achievement and a very moving film. Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Yes, please.
Massively.
Dazed and Confused pissed it.
Pissed it.
In a very distant second was A Scanner Darkly, followed closely by Boyhood.
Wow.
Nice. We had votes for Before Sunrise and Before Sunset, but no love for the third film in the trilogy, Before Midnight.
Oh, whoops.
Ben's seen that.
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe they just didn't quite stick the landing. I was hoping we'd get some love for the film Bernie. Have any of you seen it?
No.
Is it Weekend at Bernie?
Not quite, no.
It's a prequel.
It's an incredible film. It's a dark comedy starring Jack Black and Matthew McConaughey, and it's a true story about a guy played by Black who strikes up a relationship with an 80-year-old millionaire and then eventually murders her. And it's a great story. As I say, it's based on a true story. So check out Bernie. It's amazing.
I don't know why, but do you remember the episode of The Office when Andy's watching the film with, Jack Black and...
Yeah.
I can't
it's
remember.
It's like Cloris Leachman or something like that.
I automatically thought of that. I was like, was that real? Oh, my God.
It is quite similar. But it's arguably Jack Black's best role. Check out Bernie.
Wow.
Awesome.
Very, very good.
So much to take away from today's episode.
Whose turn is it to pick out of the pot? I think it's Mark.
It is. Mark.
Would you like a drum roll?
I do. On the next episode, we will be masturbating over Ron Howard.
Wow.
It's now The Rewatch, and we're going to go with a film directed by Craig Gillespie in 2007, Lars and the Real Girl. Lars is a painfully shy young man who seems to block the world out. One day, he meets the girl of his dreams, Bianca, a sex doll he has ordered on the internet. He begins a deep and meaningful relationship with Bianca, which worries his brother and sister-in-law. The delusions bring the community together to help Lars during this time, but will they support him or make him a laughing stock? Now, the film stars Ryan Gosling, Emily Mortimer, and Paul Schneider, to name but a few. So this is a little bit of a different kind of tone from the previous rewatches. So I wanted to go with something a little bit more reserved, a little bit more quiet. So Ben, I'm going to throw this to you. Lars and the Real Girl, or Lars and the Real Hurl?
You're going to hurl into this.
Usually, I don't enjoy films that are quirky with a capital Q. But I loved this. I thought it was so sweet and funny. And one of the things that I think is a real miracle is that it manages to avoid the obvious sexual humour that you would expect from a film about a sex doll. It doesn't go down that route. And I thought it was magnificent.
That's really cool to hear. Mark, Ryan Gosling or Ryan Tosling?
I thought you'd say Ryan Gobbling.
Come on, that's so much better!
Sorry.
Damn it!
This film was human kindness at its best. We see this reclusive soul that showed me a side to Ryan Gosling I've not seen before in any of his work, and I'll be honest, I absolutely fucking loved it. I thought he was fantastic, but trying to describe this film to someone isn't easy.
Yeah.
But it's so original, it hit me hard emotionally. I watched it today when I'm very tired and delicate and hungover, and emotional anyway from everything we've experienced over the last 40 hours. But I'll be honest, I'm with Ben, it was beautiful and so, so well done, and I loved it.
I am over the moon that you guys both love it, because I really do love this film, and I think it's a film that I've always been in two minds whether to bring it or not, but I thought, fuck it, let's just do it. It's an adorable concept which tackles the subject of mental health beautifully. It does tend to slow its pace every now and again, but I think that is needed because there's so much to absorb about the story. And Ryan Gosling, he plays a quiet yet powerful performance who's crippled with shyness at first but blossoms into something much more at the end. Simply put, this is a stunning film and I am over the moon you guys enjoy it. So I suppose really to kick off the rewatch, I think it would be wrong of us not to comment on Ryan Gosling, because this is something that we don't see in the rest of his repertoire. He does a wonderful performance as Lars.
He does. It was a very different kind of performance for him, as Mark mentioned. He barely even looks like himself. He's chubby in the face. He's got greasy hair, a pervert mustache. And he has that kind of has that same sort of thing DiCaprio has in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that kind of nervous twitchiness, you know, because he's a guy that clearly has issues of his own.
Yeah.
And as great as he is, the film matches him because even though it's a comedy, it always treats Lars seriously, even though he's a guy who is dating a blow-up doll or a sex doll. The joke is never on him. The film always wants to highlight that he's a fundamentally nice guy, but a troubled guy with underlying issues, and it never makes fun of him. Which it's a very delicate balance, a very delicate line to walk to not make him the butt of the jokes. And I think the movie does that beautifully.
Absolutely. And how does it feel knowing that, you know, he's kind of, you know, tried to morph himself into somebody that's unrecognizable to what we've been seeing in the past few years, like Blade Runner 2049 and La La Land?
It just shows he's got the skills to do everything we want from an actor. And I think I've only seen him in stuff like Drive and Crazy Stupid Love, and he's chiseled, he looks great, he is so, so handsome. In this, like Ben said, you wouldn't know it's him. And I don't like the word pervert tash, because we wore tashes on the last photo for the episode. And
yeah, but we're all perverts.
I thought we looked good. It made me want to shave in a moustache. But he's this troubled soul, and in the film I think it gives a good message that we can communicate and help heal people instead of it just being treated like a freak.
Yeah.
And the fact that they give him this kind of acceptance, and the people all around him give him that compassion but take him seriously, so he's going to the doctors to get it looked at and all this, and everyone around him is kind of helping and support him.
Yeah.
And that's quite brave, because in a real world, if I walked down the street with a blow-up doll, people would say, "Oi, pervert," and just be like, "You're a freak, what are you doing?" And you get bullied. So it's a good message, and I suppose if you feel alone, watch this film, because it shows you that there's good people out there that will always support and help you. That sounds quite deep, but it's true.
Absolutely. And one of the fundamental points about this film, it doesn't fetishize the relationship between Lars and the doll Bianca. It never tries to make it filth, or it never tries to be, "Oh, look at this one over here." And I'm so glad, because it's so easy for writers to make it into one of these kind of jock comedies. I mean, you probably saw a lot of it in the 90s, but this isn't the 90s anymore. And it's commendable writing from Nancy Oliver, and she's written for shows such as 6 Feet Under True Blood too. But also for Gosling to work with what is essentially an inanimate object, the way how he treats Bianca, the way how he handles her, so much delicacy and so much respect, because he's not going to, like I said, they're not going to try and exploit the relationship that he has. He treats her as somebody that is his soulmate, and it's beautiful.
Even though Bianca is an anatomically correct sex doll, at no point is their relationship sexual. It's an emotional support object to him. It's not about titillation and sex at all, and it's to come up with this idea. You know, this the one you've just mentioned there, Nancy Oliver, this was the first film screenplay she'd ever written after working for some TV shows, and she was nominated for an Oscar for this.
Nice.
Which I think is deserving. Not only is it a great script, just the concept, the story, coming up with this, I think it's a bit of genius.
It reminds me a little bit of the feel and the same sort of concept as Her. So you've got this replacement in life that's a substitute for a real love and a real kind of soul to be with. But in this film, a lot like Joaquin Phoenix in Her, you're relying on the main actor to be basically playing off nothing. Mm-hmm. Yep. I know in Her it's all about the audio and the operating system, but in this he's not getting anything back. There's no emotion. He's working with just basically a puppet.
Well, yeah. This is it, because when he's moving with her, he makes up the story and says that she can't walk, so yeah. She's in a wheelchair. Therefore, it makes it easier for him to work around her and move her to this place and the next. Then he says, she's Brazilian. She can't speak English. And again, that's almost like a way for her not to be able to talk to the mm-hmm. other community. It's so clever.
He's just built blocks, yeah, hasn't he, for people to then not have to question him any further. I love mm-hmm, it, man. It's mm-hmm. really, really intelligent.
Talking about the intelligence, and it lies with the doll itself. Now, when we first meet her at the dinner table, she's, of course, got the full-on makeup. She's got a bit of revealing clothing. But if you watch the film as it goes on, and it's definitely with the face, her makeup gradually disappears
mm-hmm. yeah.
as the story goes on, to sadly to the end of the story when, you know, spoiler alert, she dies. Well, mm-hmm. she dies. Her face becomes green. Her face has this shade of greenness and paleness to suggest that she is on death's door. And I think it's such a wonderful touch, because each time you see Bianca in new scenarios, the skin colour changes and she starts turning into this deathly shade. It is so clever how yeah. they've done that to make her a part of the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned there the first time we see her at dinner with the family. Yeah. So you've got there Ryan Gosling. His family are played by Emily Mortimer, who's his sister-in-law, and Paul Schneider, who's his brother. And Schneider and Mortimer are both absolutely incredible throughout. It's no wonder that Gosling got all the plaudits for this, but those two do such great work because they want to support their family member, even though his brother is really struggling with it. The way they play it, there's always shock on their face, but they're trying their best, they're trying to be understanding, they're trying to help him through it without just making a mockery of it. And it's great reserved acting from those two.
Oh, Emily Mortimer, because she has that maternal instinct of protecting Lars and inviting him to breakfast every morning, and he just constantly wants to find a way just to mm-hmm. avoid it. And then on the opposite end of that spectrum, you've got Paul Schneider as Gus, who's trying his hardest not to be as obvious. So you've almost got the sort of the straightforward direct approach that Gus wants to give, but you've also got this beautiful caring motherly nature that Karen seems to have mm-hmm. too, and the two of them working together, it's perfect chemistry. With Patricia Clarkson playing Dagmar the doctor, again there's this lovely wonderful aura about her, because she's playing along with it just to make sure that she can get to the bottom or delve into Lars's psyche. But never, ever does it feel like it's played for her own sort of purpose. It feels like she genuinely wants to help him and to understand why he's having these delusions.
She's an underrated actress. I remember her in Easy A, she mm-hmm. plays the mum. And I think she's never like the lead role in anything, is she? But I always feel like you just take her seriously. She's a good mm-hmm. actress that should be doing more.
Yeah. She's a fantastic actress, Patricia Clarkson. It's a real, real great cast across the board, and everyone plays the roles so well. But the thing that we've kind of not really touched on is the fact that it is still a comedy. For all that it is a very touching, yeah. moving film, mm-hmm. it's also very funny in parts. I like when Ryan Gosling's character has a strop because Bianca is going to a party,
yes!
rather than staying at home to play Scrabble
That's
with him.
Right. Yeah, he's not happy, is he?
Not at all.
Or the scene that we've mentioned when he first brings Bianca around for dinner, oh, yeah. and just the look on Paul Schneider's face, his drawer is packed practically on the floor,
yeah.
that he's having to go through the motions of providing dinner for this doll. It's really funny.
It'd be good, though. I'd like to go out for a date with her, because you'd get all your food and hers.
That's very true. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
One of my favourite scenes about this film, and I think it's always one of those scenes where you go, watch this scene and then watch the entire film and it'll give you an idea of what this whole story is about, is the party scene when Lars takes Bianca to this house party, and it's almost like the first time everybody is meeting Bianca, and the way how certain people interact with him and her, it like the hosts as well, it's just so endearing. But of course you get one lad, it's like, oh, is she anatomically correct? Whoa, it's like, shut up, you absolute dork. But one bit in particular is when Gosling is dancing on his own to This Must Be the Place by Talking Heads. And he's just, Bianca's out there, you know, getting down with the others. But he's just on his own, just in his own world with his eyes closed, just slowly swaying to the song. And there's just something about being that moment of bliss and pure happiness, because he's got a woman he loves. He's being accepted by everybody around him. And I think even on the car journey home, he's like, that was a good night. Mm. It's so warm. It's just so lovely.
It is a good feel-good film, honestly. Anyone out there, you ever feel down, low, most people be like, oh, I'm not watching that. Give it a go. It's on Amazon Prime as
yeah.
well.
Yes, it is.
Really easy to access. Brilliant. Absolutely yeah. fucking... It's such a refreshing film to see because it's not often we get... Like, for me, it was a first watch and I just... It doesn't feel like an hour and 45 minutes.
No,
it's just a really solid, good film. Great mm-hmm. great detail and just... I fucking really enjoyed this.
It still breaks my heart, the ending. Ugh. You know, I mean...
We don't want you to cry today.
Oh,
not
don't.
We're too fragile.
No, we are. But it's almost quite cathartic because it's him deciding that Bianca is dying and she's... he decides to end it, basically, and you've got this really sweet, lovely funeral where everybody is joined together and he decides that he wants to develop this potential relationship with Margot, a girl at work who's incredibly charming and so, mm-hmm. so sweet. And it just ends perfectly. And it's the reason why it is a film that I do find myself rewatching maybe a couple of times each year. But it is a real... It's just... There's not enough sweet stories out there in cinema land. And please go and watch this. If you've not watched it, if you're convinced by what we've said today, give it a go.
Yeah, and tweet us your thoughts.
Please.
There you go. She hasn't cried. We're doing
no.
all right.
We're doing all right.
Let's score it before right. she does.
Yeah. Let's do it. Go on, Ben. I'll start with you.
I think it's an absolutely lovely film. I think Ryan Gosling is mesmerising to watch. It's my favourite performance of his outside of Blade Runner 2049.
Wow.
So for me, it gets a very solid 8 out of 10.
Fantastic, Mark.
I've not said anything distasteful, and we've talked about Ryan Gosling for 13 minutes.
And sex dolls.
Yes.
Well
so
done, mate.
I'm just
well
going
done.
To be mature, wrap it up very well by saying I agree with what Ben said, and it's a solid 8, and I urge you all to go out and watch it now.
I completely agree. I think this is just... It's so nice to be able to bring this film to the table, to the podcast, talk about it, and even better, for you guys to feel exactly the same way as I feel. It's going to be an 8 from me, so that means that Lars and the Real Girl... gets a skip to the end, 8 out of 10. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. At this point, I want to know whose rewatch choice is
it
next.
Me too.
Oh, that would be me.
Oh.
So next time round, our main review is going to be the very dark and heavy It Chapter 2.
Fucking hell, I can't
yes!
wait.
So what I want to do for the rewatch is really go to the opposite end of the spectrum for that. We need something light and silly. So our rewatch is going to be the cult Andy Samberg comedy
yes!
Hot Rod.
Yes!
Yes!
Oh my God, we're back again. It's the third and final round of Lost the Plot.
I've
again.
Lost the plot right now.
I've lost my hearing after
yeah.
that.
Okay, sorry, listeners.
I thought I'd try and like rejuvenate us with some fucking excitement.
No, stop this. Quiet down. Quiet.
I'm going to tell you the rules whether you like it or not. So I've got a list of 10 films. And for each of them, I've got a description of what the film is all about from IMDb. That's IMDb. And with this, I'm going to use it to explain the film's plot and what these two champs over here are going to do. They're going to guess what film I'm describing. But when you think you know which film I'm talking about, what I want you guys to do is shout your name.
Mm-hmm.
Simple?
Mm-hmm.
Today's going to be a struggle.
Yeah.
I mean, we could literally get any old name.
I know.
It's just going to be dead air for 10
yeah.
minutes because my brain is not engaged at all.
You know what? I will take grunts.
Okay.
I'll take that. Like, oh, yeah, Ben, go on. But you'll get a guess when
yep.
you say your name or if you decide
yep.
to use some form of noise. And if you're right, you're going to get 1 point.
Cool.
But if you get it wrong, you're locked out and your competitor's going to get the go and the possible point from you too. Now, does that sound pretty straightforward or do I need to say that again?
I get it.
I'm all good.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. So, number one, when young children in a little town goes missing, a group of 7 kids find out...
Mark.
Ben.
Mark, go ahead.
It.
He's got it.
Yeah.
Well done.
So that energy, yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm literally trying to lower
know,
my voice because I was really excited for you. So Mark gets the point. It is, of course, it. So, number two, you guys ready?
Yep.
Let's get to it. A reporter and her ex-husband investigate a cursed videotape that is rumoured to... Ben.
The Ring?
Yeah!
Yeah!
Ooh.
Yeah! No, let's try. Come on, Mike.
Oh, okay, come on. Let's get it.
That's right.
It's one all.
Come on.
Oh.
Come on.
Okay, let's get him juiced up and leave him dangling.
Vocal zone.
No. Okay, so it's one apiece at the moment. So number three.
Come on.
Here it comes. When their relationship turns sour, a couple undergoes a medical procedure to have each other erased. Bam. Go on.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Bingo bango, he's got
good
it. Well
work.
Done.
I nearly forgot the name of the fucking film.
It's not an easy one, to be honest.
I literally had to IMDb it just to make sure I had the right one. For some reason, I was thinking Eternal Sunshine and the Spotless Mind, but we all know that's not right.
It's 2-1. Look at how it's just turned like that.
But all could change with number four.
Let's do it.
A man's uneventful life is disrupted by the zombie apocalypse.
Ben. Shaun of the Dead.
Bingo!
Good work! 3-1.
He is running away with the lead as we speak, whereas Mark's just a little bit on a jog.
Started well.
Could still win it though, still all to play for.
Remember the tortoise and the hare, mate?
Yeah, exactly.
You can do this. So yes, Ben is on 3, Mark is on 1, so on to the next one. You guys ready?
Yes.
Yes.
I severely hope so, but I'm going to carry on regardless, so... They were 5 students with nothing in common, faced with spending a Saturday detention together in their high school.
The Breakfast Club?
That is right!
Hey, well done, dude. God. That's great work.
Holy hell.
Obliterating with 4 points at the moment, Mark. You can still...
I can still win if I get the next 5.
I'm glad you said that because I'm not good at maths. So the next one. An ex-hitman... comes out of retirement to track down the gangsters that killed his dog.
Mark. Ben. Mark.
Oh, that was Mark. Come on.
Oh.
John Wick.
Well done.
Yes. Oh, the fight back is on.
Here we go. So.
There was literally a millisecond in that.
If that,
You'll listen back now and be like, it was Ben.
Mm-hmm. Oh, never mind. You got the point anyway. Cool. So, Mark, you're on 2 points. Ben is still on 4. Everything is to play for, okay? Right. The next one. A wisecracking mercenary.
Ben.
Go on.
I've shot my load
too. Go on.
Deadpool.
Correct!
Hey! Fix. That's insane.
From a wisecracking mercenary. Well done, Ben. I would like to say that you could win it. I would like to say that. Moving on swiftly. A young woman in El Paso, Texas, awakens after a 4-year-long coma to find her baby daughter gone. And immediately swears revenge on the people.
Oh, Ben.
Ben.
Kill Bill.
Ding, 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 ding,
ding. That took a while. I was like,
oh, yeah.
But he did get it right.
Ooh.
I think you've won it now, Ben, but I can still play for a little bit of bread.
Little bit of bread.
There's 2 left.
Little bit of bread? I got on. Wait a minute. I know where this is going now.
We're not going down that avenue again. No.
Thank goodness. Number 9. A small-time boxer gets a supremely... That shrug.
Why not? Rocky.
Let me give you the point, sir. Well done.
I thought you were going to twist it then and be like Raging Bull or something.
You're right, don't you worry. So you got 3 points at the moment. That's all right. But we've got one more.
Cool.
In the future, a sadistic gang leader is imprisoned and volunteers for a conduct aversion experiment, but it doesn't go as planned.
Ben? Demolition Man?
You were locked out, my lovely. I'm sorry.
Good choice, though, man.
But, Mark, you can get this point.
I'm not going to because I have no idea.
You know what? Pluck anything that comes out from the sky. That sounds vaguely familiar to this plot.
Was that it? Or was there a bit more to read out?
I can read it again.
Was that it? Oh, shit.
Yeah, tell you what. Let me read it again for
you. All right.
In the future, a sadistic gang leader is imprisoned and volunteers for a conduct aversion experiment, but it doesn't go as planned.
Oh, I know what it is.
A lot of words.
I know,
Ben can guess it for me.
Clockwork Orange.
Yes.
Amazing.
That's right.
Mark can have the point.
Thanks, dude. That's awesome.
Never in the history of Skip to the End game shows have we had someone donate a point. This is a very special day indeed.
I just took pity on him.
It's nice.
I take pity on him.
I'll be honest, I'm pretty happy with a 6-4 loss, honestly.
Six,
that's not bad. Well, it's probably 7, but we'll go with 6-4.
But I may have something in the back.
Ooh.
I've got a tiebreaker.
Let's do it.
Do you guys want to play?
Quiz.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. I'm so excited. 2 garbage men.
Mark.
Mark.
Men at work.
Yes!
Amazing.
Couldn't help myself. But it does stand that Ben had 6 points, Mark had 4, and you know what? We've got ourselves a winner, folks. Ben wins!
He's got the belt back.
I've got the belt back, finally. It's been too long.
Well done, mate, well done. Thank you very much, guys. I think it's safe to say we won't be playing that again, but find out on the next episode when we play a brand new quiz show.
It's Skip to the Recommend. Come on!
That's my line, dude. Don't be stepping on my shit.
Get off stage. Go down there.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend. That point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It could be something old, it could be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too.
Yes!
Now, as a reminder, we've never done this live. We usually have notes in front of us. I think Mark has got notes with him. Unprofessional. Unprofessional. Me and Gemma have prepared for this thing. So I'm going to throw it to Mark first, lazy boy. What is your recommendation this time around?
Well, it's an album.
Lost Prophets.
Damn, he knew. Have any of you heard the new album from Slipknot?
Yeah!
They brought a new album out last week, and it's called We Are Not Your Kind. That's why I needed notes, because I'm not the best with names.
No!
And this album, on Friday, got to number one. And do you know who it topped in the chart to get that number one spot? And isn't he an absolute prick?
Hey! He's here tonight!
So everyone's heard it, right? And even if you don't like metal, it's good metal. It's done well. Corey's vocals, and it's not the Corey. Corey Taylor, for me, is one of the best metal vocalists out there. This album from start to finish is brilliant. What's the single called? Unsainted.
Yes!
That is a fucking great opener for an album. It's a great track. Everyone heard it?
Yeah.
Even if you haven't, right, we're filming this and it's going on the episode. Right? Who's heard Unsainted by Slipknot?
Yeah!
Is it the best recommendation you've ever heard from me?
Yay!
Go out and listen to it on Spotify now, because in 2 weeks' time, Tool are bringing out a new album after 13 years, so you won't listen to anything else. So until that, honestly, Slipknot, We Are Not Your Kind. That's me done.
I got to say, I didn't love it. I've only listened to the album all the way through once.
Yep.
Didn't blow me away. And I think they're at the point where they're just recycling shit.
Oh.
So for the actual metal fans out there, for the metal fans out there who have actually heard it, have you heard the song Orphan, where they use the exact same riff they used in the Heretic anthem from Iowa? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they shouldn't
be
plagiarising their own shit. And also, I just don't like Corey's singing voice. Is that a controversial opinion? I think someone's leaving, look. They're sick of that. That was too much.
Dude, not Corey Feldman.
It's an exodus.
Wow.
I love all the songs where he raps and rants and growls and all that kind of shit. I think he's great. But when he sings, it sounds like Stone Sour, who are arguably the shittest band that ever lived. Ooh, as if that's controversial. Get fucked.
Don't you just love Ben? You know? Well, that's mine, and I like it.
So. Gemma, thoughts on Slipknot, We Are Not Your Kind?
I love the reef knot. I love the sailor's knot. And I also like the Slipknot. I'm sure they're just fantastic.
Favourite album?
Oh, The Greatest Hits. Yeah.
The best of Slipknot. Definitely. All right, Gemma, what have you brought this week?
I've gone for an old TV reality show. It's a show from the early 2000s. It's called MTV Fear. Has anybody ever heard of that?
No.
Yeah! This is how old I am. You can catch it on YouTube. They've got all season 3 episodes. But basically what it was during a time of when Blair Witch was massive. So they got a group of teenagers from America, and they bundled them off to this haunted location. So it could be a brewery or an insane asylum, or it could be a military academy. But basically, they got themselves hooked up to all of these cameras. So you had like the facial shots, like the money shot, obvs.
Oh.
And
don't type in facial or money shot.
You'll get blocked. And they made them do dares, so they had to go to, I don't know, say for example, like a prison cell for like 12 hours on their own. If they pussied out, they'd lose $5,000. Oh no, that's not great. But it provided some fantastic entertainment. You get like Stacy, 18, from, I don't know, like Los Angeles, like, yeah, you know, like, I'm just here for like exposure and stuff. And then she'd go on a dare.
Tell me that's good.
And then
that's very good. Very good, Gemma. Good.
Cheers. I wasn't really expecting an applause, but thanks. And then, you know, she'd be out, you know, going to this dare, and then, like, you know, Dirk from, like, I don't know, Las Vegas, like, okay, Stacey, right, this is your dare, okay? You got to prick your finger. You got to pull some blood out. You got to do a pentagram and worship Satan. Oh, no, I can't do it. I quit. Oh. And basically, that's three seasons worth of what you'd expect from MTV's Fear. I friggin' love it, and I hope you do too.
Thank you, Gemma.
So what have you brought, Ben?
Oh, thank you for setting me up like that. Well, I brought a documentary, and the documentary is called Fuck You All, The Uwe Boll Story. Now, you are all, of course, film fans, or else you wouldn't be here. So you'll know who Uwe Boll is, don't you? Yeah. Remember, we're being recorded. You all know who Uwe Boll is, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes! Thank you. He is legendarily the worst director of all time. He's the director of such tripe as Alone in the Dark, Blood Rain, Blood Rain 2, and Blood Rain 3. And this documentary is fantastic because it has access to him. He's actually involved in it, so there are a lot of interviews with the dude. But it's very even and balanced. There are a lot of interviews with colleagues and friends, but also detractors, people who think he's an absolute fucking idiot. So there's a lot of great content in there. And you learn a lot about the guy. So if you've ever wondered why all of his films are so fucking terrible, here's one of the reasons. He always shoots the first draft of the script. If you know anything about movie making, the first draft is effectively a throwaway. You will work maybe a year putting together 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 upwards drafts until you get something that's workable. He's not bothered. Don't give a shit. If you've got something, he will shoot it. There's your evidence. But the greatest story in this whole thing is he was going out to Croatia to film Blood Rain 3, and it's set in World War II. And he's a clever guy, old Uwe. So he decided, let's double bubble. While I'm out there, I've also got a film I want to make, also set in World War II, called Blubberella. Which is a superhero film about an obese woman of the same name. So he filmed these two movies simultaneously. Now, this is not done, ever. Movie makers might film back-to-back, for example, you know, Avengers Infinity War Endgame, but you don't film simultaneously. That's mental, right? But he did it anyway, so that he could reuse the sets, reuse the costumes, reuse the actors, and all the setups. So they show in this documentary side-by-side footage of Blood Rain 3 and Blubberella, and the scenes are exactly the same, except there's a fat woman in one of them. But it gets worse. So at least all the people involved in those two films knew this was going to happen. They knew they were going to do Double Bubble. Whilst they're out there in Croatia, midway through shooting, Uwe goes, do you know what? I've actually been working on this drama script about the Holocaust. It's called Auschwitz. Let's film that as well. So he adds a third film. He's a genius. And the thing...
he's not.
Ah, but he is, he is. He's a terrible director. Fair. But he's a very good producer. The dude has directed something like 30 movies, all of which have been outside the Hollywood system. One of the main jobs of a producer is to raise the money to make these films. Motherfucker keeps raising the money. People keep giving him the money to make these films three at once. He's a genius. And if anyone says otherwise, I will fight you. Now, do you all remember from back in the day when Adam, Mark and I interviewed Uwe?
That was about 4 years ago.
That was about 4 years ago. He's a hell of a character, isn't he?
At that point, he was making one film per, you know, year.
Yeah.
And that's it. But I like the guy. He was good on the interview.
He was good on the interview. He's great value. He's so unrepentant. He doesn't give a shit. I love him. This documentary is available in various places. Legally, I presume. Have a look. You'll find it somewhere.
Where did you watch it, Ben?
I watched it legally, obviously.
Let's have a round of applause for Skip to the recommend, please. Woo! Beautifully done.
So that was a little taste of the live show we put on, Skipfest. It was just like being there, wasn't it?
I'll be honest, how loud do the crowds sound? It's awesome. Yeah. I can't
hear a thing.
That's because it was like Wembley.
Yeah, and they've literally made me deaf. Nice.
And I want to pat all of us on the back for that, because normally when we do our segments, we have notes. We had no notes, we winged it, and we pulled it off.
That's it. Why can't we do it in here then? I don't know. We're not when it's a live audience, but oh well.
But we wanted to make sure that we still gave you out there in listener land a chance to bring us your recommendations of the week. So would you like to hear what we've got on social media?
Yes, please.
On Facebook, Carlos Knight has said Downsizing is a movie worth watching for Christoph Waltz, who is clearly having a great time, and Hong Chau, who acts rings around the entire ensemble. It's so much better than I expected, and you should not let it pass you by.
I've still not seen it.
It's the Matt Damon one,
isn't
it?
And it looked terrible. But everyone says don't judge a book by its cover or a film by its poster, and honestly, my mate Boov said go and watch it. It's fucking awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll give it a go then, because it didn't get great reviews, but if people out there are actually enjoying it, I'll give it a go.
Nice.
Good.
On Twitter, Christina Endgame X20 Edith at ProFangirl1996.
That's a mouthful.
Said they attended Nerdcore Party Con last weekend, an amazing gathering of the most awesome nerdcore artists. Now, I must admit, I'm an old man. I've no idea what nerdcore is.
No, it's not in my age range, I'm afraid.
But I did have a look at some of the pictures on their website, and it does look like it was a good event and a fun time was had by all. Excellent. So thank
Sounds
you very
like
much
Skip
for
Fest.
That. Indeed, yeah. On Instagram, David Zwedowick has said, just started season 3 of Glow. So far, it's got all the fun of the first two seasons and some pretty beautiful shot Vegas visuals to match. Have you guys started watching Glow season 3 yet?
No, but I've heard not great things.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
I didn't like it.
No.
There's no plot. There's no wrestling.
Mm.
They literally only show wrestling, I think, in two of the episodes.
I want my money back.
They kind of ruin a couple of the characters. Their motivations change for no apparent reason. It's not great, and I loved the first two seasons. I think the first two seasons made my top five list of TV both years, you know, when we did that at the end of the year.
It came as a skip to the recommend from both of you at one point.
Yeah, but yeah, it won't be making my list this year.
That's a shame.
It is a shame. On Twitter, Rebecca Robson at Robson_Becky has said, working my way through the Disney Twisted Tales books. Not highbrow reading, but they're actually quite addictive. And I have a literature degree, so if I say they're okay, then they are.
You can't argue with that.
Fair point, Becky. On Facebook, Maureen Nolan Flanagan has said, Frank Turner's album No Man's Land, which is all about women in history.
Lovely.
Have you either of you listened to Frank Turner?
I've heard of some of his stuff
previously.
Him.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's the singer from Million Dead.
Yeah, have you heard the new album yet?
I've not heard that one, but I've heard his other stuff, and stuff like his old acoustic stuff is very, very Billy Bragg, and I think he's one of the best songwriters out there.
Wow, good to know.
Huge.
On Twitter, one of our long-time friends and listeners, who it was a shame not to see him there at the weekend, was Rupert Denham-Hall at Hall_Business. He said he's really enjoying the book Serving the Servant by Nirvana manager Danny Goldberg, covering the early days of the band, their rapid rise to fame, and the aftermath of Kurt Cobain's death.
I would fucking love to read that book.
I bet you would. Yeah, yeah, it looks good. And when Rupert put out this tweet, the author of the book, Danny Goldberg, tweeted his thanks back.
I love it when people do that.
Yeah, me too.
That's cute.
On Instagram, now this, Gemma, this sounds like one for you. On Instagram, Paul McGinley, aka Ginch77, 66 Garage sounds like a bad rapper, but it's actually the name given to a person who lay unidentified and unconscious for 15 years in a care home, or so everyone believed. Room 20 is a podcast which investigates what happened to 66 and who he really is. Gripping stuff.
I'm downloading that and listening to this on the way home tonight. That sounds awesome. Awesome.
I knew you'd like that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds like a stunt that David Blaine would do. Going, you know what I mean? That's all wacky shit.
If it turns out to be David Blaine, I will unsubscribe and I will not be happy.
John Brooks at Brooksy17 has said, F is for Family on Netflix, the best animated series since King of the Hill. If you want a second opinion, then ask Benny. Apparently our mate Benny likes it as well. So yeah. Have either of you ever watched it? Yeah? What do you think?
Oh, it's cracking. It's brilliant. It's Bill Burr. that yes. created it and does mm-hmm. the voice. Fantastic. And it's very brutal in places, especially towards the end of the first season. It deals with, you know, potential divorce and what that means for the family. It's brilliant. It's so, so good. It's set in the 70s, so it has that kind of flavour to it. Very underrated. But yes, I agree. It's wonderful.
I only watched the first couple of episodes. For whatever reason, I didn't stick with it. I didn't dislike it. There's just so much to watch that I didn't stay with it. But I'll give it another go.
Stick with it. It's hilarious. And it's so crude, but not in a Family Guy way.
Sounds great.
It is brilliant.
On Facebook, Joe Myers has said, I saw Weird Al Yankovic at the Greek Theatre in LA for his Strings Attached tour. If you're a fan, seeing him with a 41-piece orchestra is a must.
Oh, yes!
I'm very jealous. That must be amazing.
Yeah.
I love that Weird Al's having this kind of moment. You know, he's been around, I think, what, since the 80s? And then I think it was 2 or 3 years ago he had his first number one record in the US, and people are sort of rediscovering him and loving him all over again.
Get out of town!
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And then finally on Twitter, Replicant H-146 at Harley Mumford has said the Breaking Bad Insider podcast, a behind-the-scenes look at the best TV show of all time. I agree with you on that, Harley. He says, podcasting doesn't get any better. Well, except maybe for Skip to the End.
Ah, lovely save.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. That sounds right up your street, dude.
Yes, I will definitely, because I'm planning to rewatch all of Breaking Bad again soon, so I might coincide it with listening to the podcast along with it.
That's a good plan.
You're actually going to watch something else apart from The Office again? Yeah. You've got a week off work, haven't you, coming
up? I've
got
2 weeks off work.
You know you're going to do the whole of The Office again.
Probably.
I'm not talking the British Office either, the whole 9 seasons of American Office.
Yes.
Why not?
Probably after. Please keep your recommendations coming in. You can get us on Twitter at STTE Podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or email us podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. It brings us to the end of our 5th year on air.
That's amazing.
I keep forgetting this is our 5-year anniversary special episode as well.
We haven't picked it up, have we?
We haven't picked it up because we've been talking about Skipfest and we're just knackered.
Yeah, we're so tired. Yeah, send help.
Apologise for this episode. It's not our best.
It's not our best.
We've done well.
We've done pretty bloody good.
We've got through it, and that's all we can really ask at this point.
But I'll probably want a bit of an extended break, if I'm honest, because I'm tired.
Oh, God, you're speaking to the choir, mate.
Yeah.
I think we've earned it. Yeah. Shall we have a 3-week break before the next one?
And it's your birthday coming up, dude.
What?
It is. It's my birthday, and I'm supposed to be spending it in Ireland. But I might not be going, because the day I'm supposed to fly is the day that the fucking Ryanair pilots have decided to strike. So I still, as of this date, don't know if I'm going to Ireland or not, which is infuriating.
That's right. No,
No, don't give them that.
Screw them.
Yeah, that's not good. Mm-hmm. Cheers. Just for more money. Selfish.
And as pilots earn 6 figures, they can do one.
Annoying. But anyway, let's talk. I'll tell you what, Ben, I'm going to cheer you up.
Go on.
You know our good friend Grumpy Jimmy from Lime Bay Winery, who we met.
It was delightful to meet him.
There's one thing I didn't like about him, which I loved him. I loved his presence. He came and had a great time. While I'm on stage, at one point he shouted Ian Watkins at one and I was like, I was going to try and get through the whole show without mentioning him, because if we're going to mention him, then we're playing pedo bingo. And you said no because we're not allowed to mention him, and he got away with it.
That's hilarious.
But he's been incredible. He's given us some garden mead and chili mead for Ben. Look at that.
And Jimmy knows how much I love this chili mead, man. I am all over it. I've not tried the garden mead, but I'm looking forward to giving that a go as well.
Good. I remember when you met him on the night, I don't know if you were too drunk at this point, and you were like, oh, I love the mead, it's so good. I was like, but his arsehole doesn't. And it was quite funny. And Gemma, he's got you some gin.
I mentioned this on the night.
It's incredible.
It's a great bottle as well.
It is.
It's beautiful.
Decent.
It's Lime Bay Winery.
So kind. He actually came and met some of the Skip fam and stuff over the weekend, bought them all samples and bottles and stuff. One of the nicest guys out there, man. Yeah.
We love you.
Yeah,
we
so
really
thank
love
you.
You.
For that. Genuinely, thank you. So we've got 3 weeks off. I've got some rum. Look at this.
Ooh, lovely.
Hello.
So we're going to enjoy that for the next 3 weeks. That won't last till tonight, will it, really? Ben's looking at it now like it's like a stripper.
Although I think the last thing I need right now is more booze.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll leave it for a day.
Yes.
Or maybe not. We'll see how it goes.
Fuck it.
Shall we tell them what's coming up on the next episode in 3 weeks' time?
It's going to be massive.
Mark, it's your topic. What have you picked?
It's the top 3 worst endings in cinema history. Mm-hmm. And I thought we'd done it, because it seems like an obvious one. I went on the website, I promise you guys, I even did the control F and typed in endings. And made sure we've not done it.
What? Amazing. Oh my gosh.
That will be a lot of fun. Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
We are masturbating over Ron Howard.
Nice.
Mr. Reliable. And I'm quite excited, because when you think of his name, you always think of that dude from Happy Days.
Yeah.
No. He's actually done some pretty good films.
Yeah.
He's had a long and fruitful career, so there's a hell of a lot to choose from. Our main review is It Chapter 2, which we've mentioned. We're tremendously excited by all that, aren't we?
Fucking
the
way.
The trailer is genuinely everything I could ask for. Yeah. And now I've seen the casting out there, I can't wait.
It's going to be incredible. And a nice bit of counter-programming to that, our rewatch, Light and Fluffy, is Hot Rod.
I'm so excited.
One of the stupidest films in history, and I fucking love it.
Oh, it's insane.
We're going to have a brand new game. We're going to have an absolute ton of prizes to give away. Hopefully we'll be slightly less hungover and tired next time. No guarantees though.
No, because fuck it, we do what we want.
Yeah.
And if we want to get drunk and randomly just turn up hungover, we can, because it's not a proper job.
It's true.
Do you know what I mean?
No one would pay us for this.
No. Yeah. Well, actually, on that note, from next episode, it's $2.99 an episode to download. We could retire if everyone paid, but they're not going to.
Yeah.
Shame. Oh well.
Shame.
Back to the drawing board, guys.
Indeed, but it's been fun, it's been emotional, but I am so goddamn tired. All I want to do now is get some fish and chips and then go to bed.
Chippy tea for us all. We've earned it. Chippy tea.
Chippy tea.
Chippy tea. There we go.
See you in 3 weeks.
Such a